Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live Special number 322, recorded Monday, June 5th, 2017, WWDC 2017. This TWiT Live Special is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or your tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/TWiT. I am Megan Maroney.
And I am Nathan Olivares-Giles.
We are excited. We are going to do our best. We had a conversation before about not talking over the keynote. It's hard, though.
It is. It's a balance. It's a balance, but we're going to try and provide a little play-by-play, hopefully some description for those people who are listening rather than watching, and hopefully some analysis and context, and we'll be, geeking out and excited and or disappointed in real time with everybody else. This will be fun. This will be really fun.
I'm excited. As we said, whenever we do these, we get lots of feedback, people saying, you talk too much.
Yeah.
And we never get, what I said before, we never get feedback. No one ever emails us and says, you talked the exact right amount. Hopefully there's at least one person that thinks that. The problem is,
feel free to send an email if you're that guy.
We don't know what's going to happen either. So we try to do our best to sneak in.
Yeah. We don't know, but there have been a lot of rumors. There are some expectations. Of course, since this is a developer conference, it's the worldwide developer conference for Apple. It's their software focused event. You're likely going to see a new version of iOS, macOS, tvOS, and likely watchOS 2. Along with that, I would expect some updates to their core apps like iMessage and Photos. We saw the iMessage apps come out just about a year ago. I guess they were announced about a year ago, and they've been out for a little less than that. That'll be really interesting to see how that progresses so far. And, of course, there have been rumors of hardware, too. And sometimes they take WWDC to announce hardware. Sometimes they don't. The rumors being updates to the Mac Pro, the trash can device that hasn't been updated since 2013, MacBook laptops, and possibly even new iPad sizes. But that's been rumored for a couple Apple events so far, and it hasn't happened, right?
And of course the speaker, the Siri speaker.
Oh yeah,
which this How makes sense. That? You know, a lot of people said, well, why would they announce hardware at a developers conference? But the developers are here, and we need developers in order to make it useful, to make the speaker useful, to make it do things, to give it skills, as the Amazon Echo calls it.
Yeah, the Amazon Echo has thousands of so-called skills, and that is because of third-party developers. Google Home is on the rise as well. Their voice-controlled speaker, and third parties can tie into that. Now, we did see some voice control through Siri for apps last year on iOS. So hopefully, if a Siri speaker comes about, they would be able to explain, is that as easy for developers to tap into as it is the third, the voice control for Siri apps on iOS or not, and Siri's on the desktop as well, too. So hopefully we'll be hearing a lot more about Apple's plans for artificial intelligence overall, but especially with these voice-controlled on products. And then there's also been rumors of a possible Apple Cash app to complement Apple Pay, which would work a bit like Square Cash or Venmo, where you'd send money person to person. Whether or not that's going to happen, we don't know. We'll find out. But as always, the Apple rumor mill, it just like kicks into high gear before WWDC, and there are a lot of interesting rumors. We'll see where it goes.
iOS 11 also, that excited about that. I heard a rumor that there will be a dark mode, which isn't just for...
I would like that, actually.
Yeah, it's not just to look good, but it would save battery.
Yeah.
Right? Because fewer pixels would be used.
Yeah, basically all the anything you see on your display that's white would be dark, and text would be reversed. So that would be pretty interesting. And if Apple were to come out with an OLED display for an iPhone, which they're not going to talk about iPhones here. Like, don't expect that. But if later on that did happen, the control that OLED displays allow you to have over turning pixels on and off would be perfect for a dark mode and saving battery life. So that would be, you know, you can't say it's like a definite like nod and wink to such a display coming. But that, of course, has been rumored as well.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think we'll hear anything about iPhone?
I don't think we're going to hear anything about iPhone hardware. I think this will be decidedly iPhone software. And simply because the iPhone gets its own event. I mean, you know, Apple's style with a lot of this is if there's a major product launch, it usually has its own event. And the iPhone is their flagship product. Now, a Siri speaker here as a hardware introduction would make a lot of sense because of what you said earlier. Mm-hmm. They want third-party developers to embrace you know, all of their different platforms and stores, and working with their vision of what AI is, you know, that's part of the sell here. To just to put this kind of in a broader context, Facebook, they had their developer conference earlier this year, and they focused on artificial intelligence powering their AR camera feature in their namesake app. And to a lesser extent, they were talking about chatbots, which are driven by their AR platforms as well. So that's kind of how they're playing with artificial intelligence. And their sell was, hey, you know, we have the largest social network in the world. Come build with us. You're going to have great success if you build on our platforms. Google I.O. is talking about artificial intelligence across all their products. And we saw their cloud TPU processors, which will say, hey, if you build on our platform, you're going to be able to advance this machine learning and artificial intelligence technology quicker. We have the resources. Come build with us. And now we're going to see Apple's vision for basically the future of where their things are going. And this is their opportunity to tell developers and to consumers, too, come build your apps on our platforms. Come buy our products. And here's what the future will look like. So you know, these are very much competing messages of where developers should put their resources.
Mm-hmm. And we have a developer who comes often, Evan, right? Is it?
Yeah.
You don't have a microphone, so I'll have to repeat. But what, you're a Swift developer?
Yes. React Native.
Okay.
And so, what are you most excited about? I'll repeat it in the microphone.
There's a couple of things. One of the things in Swift 4 that's being announced is a way for us to use. It'll help with using web services. So it's a JSON conversion. Which is something that's kind of exciting. I'm just excited about a lot of the announcements, just to find out. A lot of us kind of know what's been happening with Swift, but also it'd be interesting to see what's going to happen with Xcode, what kind of changes are going to be in the developer tools. Those kind of things.
Cool.
And you know, it was pretty interesting. The last couple days, Apple has announced some things that would normally you'd see in a WWDC keynote, like Swift Playgrounds being an app that they make for iOS where you can learn how to use the Swift programming language. That's great for kids and adults, to be honest. Now it's open not just for iOS apps, but also robots and drones and tech toys. And then also Apple announced that they have paid out more than $70 billion to third-party developers who have sold their apps through the App Store. And that's after Apple takes its 30% cut of revenue. So those are the sorts of announcements that in the past you would see in WWDC keynotes. And, you know, the thinking is, at least my thinking, why are they announcing that before? What do they have to fill that space with in the keynote itself? So I think that kind of raises the stakes even more.
Yeah, I mean, if it's bigger than that, because the Swift Playground stuff is really exciting to me. As kids get more and more involved with technology and iPads, I like to see them creating as opposed to just consuming. So the idea that you could get, you know, the Spark, Spiro Spark, and be able to control that.
Yeah, Lego's Mindstorms toys as well.
Or any kind of robot, if they could really get in and coding, it gets to that. Once something becomes a toy and not just a tool, that's when you really learn it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing I would like to see, which I don't necessarily think we'll see today at WWDC, is a 4K version of the Apple TV, a set-top box device. You know, they've been pushing tvOS. We've heard a lot of talk in the past from Apple that the future of television would be apps. And there are some pretty great apps on Apple TV. And I guess Amazon Prime is finally coming over to tvOS too. you know, hopefully they talk about tvOS. I don't think we're going to see a hardware update for Apple TV at this event, but if there is a surprise, I wouldn't mind a 4K version of that. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I have Apple TV, and then we also, but we have a 4K TV that is an Android TV, and the user experience is a lot better than the Apple TV. Unfortunately,
it's a Sony television.
Yep,
I'm guessing.
It's a Sony with, you know, Chromecast built in, and I've been using YouTube TV, and I've really been, you know, dabbling on the dark side. Yeah, because I've had my Apple TV for a couple of years, and it's fine, but it doesn't have Amazon, for example. Yeah.
Oh, you know, another area where I'm expecting to see some announcements would be with Apple Music. In the past, Apple has spoken about getting into producing original content, video content, and that living in Apple Music. I know, there's been reports of Dr. Dre working on a show. There's that kind of app game show that they've announced, as well as Carpool Karaoke. Hopefully they also speak a little bit about their content plans, original content plans, for Apple Music and what that will look like, as well.
If the speakers, I mean, if we are beginning to live in a world where everyone has that sort of home speaker, whether it be an Amazon Echo or a Google Home or whatever Apple might or might not release, I think that I could see it being an Apple product for most people, because you can use Apple Music, and Apple Music is already on your phone. And a lot of, if you're not already bought into Spotify, if you're not already, you know, have all your playlists there and everything, then that might be just what you choose because it's on your phone. And then you choose to have that speaker in your house. The speaker is supposed to be better quality speaker. Than what you get on your Amazon iPhone.
And I'd love to see that. I mean, one of the things that Apple has taken serious in the past, we've seen it with the old iPod hi-fi, like boombox looking thing, and their acquisition of Beats. They do care about sound. And to be honest with you, one of the reasons why I leave my Echo speaker and my Google Home unplugged and kind of in a box in my closet most of the time is because I don't really like the sound quality. Now, maybe I'm a little bit nerdy. I want to go so far as to say I'm a full audiophile, but I have Sonos speakers in my home. I really love them. I wish I could control them with my voice, but I'd rather control them through my phone because of that sound quality. So if there is a Siri speaker, I'd love to hear Apple talk about its differentiation in terms of sound. That, to me, would be a good sell. Also, I expect them to talk about privacy issues as well. There are a lot of privacy compromises that you make by putting the Echo speaker or the Google Home into your home. And one of the areas that Apple has kind of recently made a selling point for itself as a company has been the idea that they're going to respect your data. They're not going to collect as much data. And they're going to be a little bit more transparent about what they're doing with it versus Google and Facebook and Amazon and these other companies. Of course, the counterpoint argument to that is that the AI from competitors might be a little bit more capable because it knows more about you and what it's doing.
If you need anything, you can call me. Make sure to keep your ID with you.
All right, looks like the keynote's starting, and we have a little video here.
Cafeteria is on the fourth floor, and we generally take lunch about 12:30.
This is where I'm sitting?
For now, yeah. With the big move coming up, it's kind of crazy around here.
It's like a video, like a new hire orientation, so to speak.
All right, thank you.
They're getting a fella settled in what is a server room. He's putting in his white earbuds. I'm using an old school Craig Reel iPod.
Waterfall. He appeared to knock something over and shut everything down in the world.
Say, I hope it's not this easy to knock down all of Apple's operating systems and apps.
Even people's Apple Watches.
Hey, come on! We need Airbnb!
This is not an Airbnb!
Where are we, man?
I don't know, man!
This is terrifying.
I don't even know what city we're in! Look out!
leaders are declaring a global state of emergency until the app situation can be resolved.
Zombies! Hey, buddy! Zombies! Zombies!
The apocalypse is nigh!
Someone trying to give away selfies on the street.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Physical face swapping.
iTunes! Get you iTunes!
You think we should have gone with the puppy paste?
I just ate this whole pizza by myself! Hashtag, too delicious to share! Hashtag, pizza
emoji! The world without the internet.
Farm Bill 2 right here, y'all!
Hashtag, instant food!
Brian, looking for Brian?
Hashtag, does anybody want a slice?
And at the end of the video showing the apocalypse that would come if all the apps went down, the message is, keep making apps, the world is depending on you. So Apple's talking directly to developers here with a sense of humor as well.
And a sense of fear. Now Tim Cook's coming on the stage.
Good morning! I'm so glad that really can't happen. Welcome to WWDC. It's great to be back in San Jose, the heart of Silicon Valley and right down the street from Apple in our new campus. It's been 15 years since we held a developer conference in San Jose, and an awful lot has changed. But the one thing that hasn't changed is our commitment to the developer community and our ability to do amazing things together. This is going to be the best and biggest WWDC ever. Every year, we host WWDC to bring Apple engineers and our amazing developers together on our collective mission to change the world. And I'm pleased to tell you, the Apple developer community has never been more vibrant. We now have 16 million registered developers in the program around the world, and we added 3 million last year alone. We've got 5,300 developers here this morning, our largest group ever. We have attendees this morning from 75 countries across the world. It's truly a worldwide conference. And we have the most student developers with us this morning ever. In fact, one of our youngest is here this morning. His name is Yuma Sorianto. He's from Australia, and he's just 10 years old. He started coding when he was 6, and he already has 5 apps on the App Store.
That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I met Yuma yesterday, and I can't wait to see what he's going to accomplish next. And while we've got some great up-and-coming developers like Yuma, we've got some that got a bit of a later start. Masako Wakamiya is just 82 years old, and she's from Japan, and she published her first app earlier this year. So if you haven't published yet, there is still time. Let's give them a big round of applause. Now let's turn our attention to our 4 incredible platforms. Of course, as you know, each of them stem from the same core technology, but each is uniquely expressed and designed for the best experience for where they work. We keep pushing these platforms forward, giving you, the developers, powerful tools and opportunities to change the world. That's why this developer conference is so important. Now, we have a lot to talk about today, and I do mean a lot. So I'm dispensing with the updates other than to tell you Apple's doing great.
Nothing to see here.
We have six important announcements to share with you this morning. So let's get right into it, and I'll start with tvOS. We recently introduced the TV app on Apple TV, iPhone, and iPad to create the easiest way to discover and enjoy your TV content from across your video channels, all in one convenient place. We launched it with support from just a handful of video channels, but now we have 50 partners integrated into the TV app. And today, we're really thrilled to announce that Amazon is coming. Amazon is coming to the TV app and Apple and all Apple TVs later this year with Amazon Prime Video. And of course, as you know, Prime Video provides a wealth of great content, thousands of TV shows and movies, and some great original content like Transparent, Mozart in the Jungle, Man in the High Castle, and so much more. We are so pleased to welcome Amazon to Apple TV.
I always wonder who held that decision up. Which side was it, Bezos or Cook or someone?
Or maybe a little bit of both. That's along TVOS, with this, they're going to start selling the Apple TV on Amazon's website again, which they haven't TVOS been doing for a few years.
Later this year. Number two, let's talk about Apple Watch. Apple Watch has had incredible growth this past year. In fact, it's the number one selling smartwatch by far. And what's most important to us is that it's number one in customer satisfaction, again, by far. Apple Watch is designed to help you live a healthier life, and people are absolutely loving the fitness capabilities, the health capabilities, the quick access to information, and even the ability to swim with it. We've got some exciting updates to the watchOS. And to take you through them, I'd like to invite Kevin Lynch up. Kevin?
It'll be interesting to see where watchOS goes. It was originally positioned more as like a kind of a productivity device,
so
and it's become more of a lifestyle product.
Really quickly, and I'm very excited to introduce watchOS 4 today. This furthers the areas that people love and also introduces new ways to make the watch more personal to you. Let's start with watch faces. Now, Apple Watch is great for quickly glancing at information, and many people are using a watch face like this today. And now you need to choose what information shows up here. So, for example, weather, calendar, and workouts, or maybe you'd like to look at the date and reminders and sunset. The information that you'd like to see actually varies based on time and your location and your routines. What if we could actually show you a selection of information that you might need automatically? Well, Siri is becoming more and more a proactive assistant, knowing what information you need, when you need it. And we've created a new watch face, which is powered by Siri Intelligence.
Interesting.
This is the new Siri watch face. Now, it automatically displays the information that's most relevant to you, and you can also access Siri just by tapping on the new complication on the top left. And it automatically displays this information with the same type of intelligence we've applied on iOS. We're using machine learning to adapt automatically based on your routines and the apps that you use when you use them. So in the morning, I might see, for example, commute time and my first meeting. And if I rotate the crown, I can see more information from Siri. For example, reminders or even photo memories from this same time last year or maybe from this location. And throughout the day, whenever you raise your wrist, the face will dynamically update with information for you. So for example, at noon, I might see a reminder to make a call, and I might get a pass to a flight that I'm taking that afternoon. So relevant passes and wallet can appear here right in the face, including from third-party apps. Now, at the end of the day, I might see what time the sun's going to set, and also I can get access to controls I tend to use in the home app at night. So this is an intelligent, proactive assistant right on your wrist, and this is the new Siri face on Apple Watch.
So such a fine line between what's creepy and what's helpful.
Exactly, exactly.
How much do you want Apple to know about where you're going?
You might like kind of less information and more graphics, and that's the soul of the new Kaleidoscope face. It displays a beautiful, symmetrical pattern that slowly changes throughout the day. And you can rotate the crown, and you can get this kind of trippy effect whenever you want. And there's multiple styles you can choose from. So, for example, if you use a photo like this, you can create a variety of kaleidoscope styles. This is the new kaleidoscope face.
So this is Kevin Lynch, VP of Technology at Apple.
Now, Mickey and Minnie have been a big hit on Apple Watch, and more characters have been working to find their way in. And I'm really excited to welcome
to see, like, a Buzz Lightyear
Woody and Jesse and Buzz.
Good call. You're the target market.
They're going to be right clearly.
Buzz Lightyear face so that Nate wanted.
Whenever you raise your watch with the Toy Story face, you're going to see a variety of vignettes, kind of like this. A lot of hijinks going on in there. So these are three really lively new faces in watchOS: Siri face, Kaleidoscope, and Toy Story.
Now, one thing Apple isn't doing that Google does do with its Android Wear, which is far less popular, is open these watch faces
Apple
up to
watch
third parties. I'd still like to see that happen someday.
Health and fitness. And activity is one of the most
Some of the complications are open to third parties.
Yeah, but not full watch faces. Yeah, good
are more
point.
Personalized to you to help you close your rings more often. So you might start off each day with some inspiration by receiving an update like this. This lets you know if you're close to accomplishing an achievement or what you can do to match yesterday's goals. And these are all personalized to you. And as part of this smarter coaching, we're also introducing monthly challenges. And these challenges are designed to help you either beat or repeat something that you accomplished or came close to doing. And they're all achievable because they're based on your real history. And like every great coach, we want to celebrate your success. So we've added a little bit more fun when you close your rings or earn an achievement. So you'll get smaller celebrations for everyday successes and bigger celebrations for harder to reach milestones. Now, we've also enhanced the workout app to be even easier to use and more powerful, starting with the new UI, where quick starts right up front. You can just tap and go. It's much easier. And customers have really loved the new swimming capabilities in Series 2. And we're now enhancing the pool swim workout with auto sets. So just by taking a rest at the edge of the pool, we'll automatically mark each set of swimming that you're doing. And at the end, you'll even get your distance for each stroke type and your pace for each set that you're doing. And we also are creating... It's great. The pool swim thing is very popular. We also created some custom motion and heart rate algorithms for a new workout type called high-intensity interval training. Now, this is one of the most popular workouts in the world, so we know it's going to be a favorite for a lot of you when you start using it.
That's HIIT, the HIIT training.
Now, if you like to do more than one workout in a row,
yeah, I do.
It's now super easy to just swipe over during a current workout and then add another one by pressing the plus button. So you just press plus, and I can continue with another workout. For example, I might do some outdoor cycling here. I just tap. And I continue. Super easy now to do multiple workouts in a single session.
Nice. Definitely seems like they're doubling down on the health and fitness features here.
Now, many people are doing the workouts indoors at a gym. And when you use gym equipment, it has data the Apple Watch doesn't have. And the watch has data the gym equipment doesn't have. So you end up with numbers like calories and distance that don't quite match. So in watchOS 4, we've come up with a great solution to this. We're enabling, for the first time, two-way data exchange in real time with gym equipment. So you'll be able to simply tap your Apple Watch on an NFC reader on the gym equipment. Your watch will automatically launch the workout app, and you can connect. And then your heart rate is read by the watch and sent to the equipment, and data like incline and speed is sent from the equipment to your watch. And when you start and stop the workout in your gym machine, it does the same thing on your watch. So now all the information matches, it's much easier, and it's a lot more accurate. Now, this is being supported by the largest gym manufacturers in the world, who provide about 80% of equipment in gyms today. And Apple Watch-enabled equipment will be rolling out starting this fall.
I would assume that your gym equipment wasn't from 1987. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about music. Apple Watch paired with AirPods has really become a magical combination. And we're redesigning the music app on Watch to make this a really great experience. With the new music app, we're going to automatically sync music for you based on what you love to listen to. So, for example, we'll automatically get your Apple Music mixes, like new music and favorites, freshly updated on your watch. And the app simply presents some beautiful album art and playlist images, and you can just navigate by rotating the digital crown. When you get to the album you like, you can just tap and play. So you can easily play your music now, and we support multiple playlists and music on the watch now. So your music that you love is going to be ready when you are, and making Apple Watch and AirPods a truly magical listening experience. That's the new music app.
I would like to see the shape of that woman's ears who was running with her AirPods, because
that is
impossible.
Let's take a look at this to give you a quick demo of watching.
I've actually run with them in my ears and not lost them, but I've only run around my apartment building because I'm so afraid of losing them. So I have a pair of Beats headphones with the wire. That's just because I really like them. I don't want to lose them.
I'm so excited to be here. The first thing I want to show you is the new dock. I can now vertically scroll through my recently used apps, like the new music app. Using the dock, makes finding the apps I'm looking for easier than ever.
Well, the new vertical dock looks a little
bit
more like what you see on
iOS.
Let's
look at the new intelligent Siri watch face. Here in the warm morning, I could see things like the weather for today and my upcoming events. Later today, I'm heading back to San Francisco to see my parents. And in the afternoon, the Siri face will proactively update to tell me how long it'll take me to get there. Tonight, we're going to see the new Alien movie, which I'm super excited about. No one spoil it for me. For any content in the Siri face, I could tap directly into the app for more details. Here, for example, the Siri face has my tickets, so tonight I can just raise my wrist, and with one tap, they'll be ready. The Siri face also shows me timely content like photo memories and news. Here's a news headline picked for me by the brand new news app now available on Apple Watch. In the app, I can view stunning photos, glance at top news stories throughout the day, and save them for later to be read on my phone. We've also integrated our new activity coaching notifications directly into the Siri face. Now, when it's near the end of your day or you're close to closing your rings, our coaching algorithms will tell you how much you need to walk to hit your move goal. I did a lot of nervous pacing before this, so now I just need to take a 16-minute walk. Let's close those rings. We've added something new here in Workout that's really cool. Music instantly gets me motivated, and now in watchOS 4, I can pick a playlist that automatically starts with my workout. Let's do it.
That's helpful.
And when I'm in a workout, I can quickly swipe to the left and control my music right here.
I want to go work out right now. You're okay with that, right?
I can just hold down the rest of the show by myself. It's fine.
Yeah.
These are only a few of the new features in watchOS 4. I can't wait for you to try it out. Back to Kevin to tell you more.
Terrific job, Vera. Thank you. There's a lot more coming in watchOS 4, including, for example, a new flashlight in the control center, which you can also use as a blinking safety light when you're doing an evening run.
I have wanted that for so long.
We, of course, have a number of updates.
You're getting your flashlight. I'm getting my Buzz Lightyear.
We're both happy.
We're off to a good start.
More support for apps running in the background, faster app responsiveness, and some new UI capabilities. And we're also now supporting native core Bluetooth on the watch, which is going to enable experiences for apps that work with small devices around you. So, for example, continuous glucose monitoring directly from Dexcom's sensor to your watch. Or Zap Tennis, which connects to a sensor on your racket for real-time swing analysis when you're playing. Or Zensor, which connects your watch to your surfboard so you can actually see the height of the waves you're doing and how many calories you're burning while you're still in the water. So lots of new possibilities here for watchOS.
That's all exciting. He threw the flashlight out there like it was no big deal.
Developer preview is available today, so you can get going. And there's a free upgrade for everyone across all watches this fall. And that's just some of what's coming in watchOS 4. Please welcome Tim back to the stage. Thank you.
Pretty interesting iterative update. Definitely doubling down on those fitness features
and kind of refining things.
Nothing too, you know, game-changing at the same time.
Let's talk about a product that in many ways is the heart and soul of Apple. And of course, I'm talking about the Mac. There's never been a computer quite like the Mac. The Mac is so important in fueling the world's passion and creativity. It's a computer all of us love to use, and no one can match the Mac's deep integration of hardware and software. And of course, at the heart of the Mac experience is macOS. And to tell you about what's next with macOS, please welcome Craig Federighi. Craig?
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Hey, good morning. Well, let's talk about macOS. Now, our current release of macOS, of course, is macOS Sierra. Now, Sierra brought Siri and Apple Pay to the Mac, let you put your documents and your desktop in the cloud, and even let you unlock your Mac automatically using the watch on your wrist. Now, people are loving Sierra, and we love it too. So we wanted to spend this year perfecting it. But of course, the question is, what do we call it? So we enlisted once again our crack marketing team. They were giddy to hop in their minibus and this time venture east, deep into the Sierras, but this time ascending its highest peaks. And when they finally came back, they had a name they said felt really, really good. And it's my privilege to announce for you today, macOS High Sierra.
That's a good job to have.
Now, we talked to the guys and we said this might be misconstrued, but they assured us this name is fully baked.
So, oh, wow.
Along with the kaleidoscope watch face.
High Sierra is all about deep technologies that provide a powerful platform for future innovations on the Mac. But we couldn't help ourselves. We also added some refinements. And it starts with Safari. Now, Safari is known for its efficiency and its legendary battery life. But Safari is also incredibly fast. In fact, we benchmarked Safari on the same hardware running macOS and Windows with all the popular browsers. And Safari smokes them in benchmark after benchmark. Jetstream, Speedometer, MotionMark. Safari tops them all. So that's right, Safari is the world's fastest desktop browser with High Sierra.
Do you use Safari, Nate?
I do.
And
Safari's domination continues
with the new modern version of JavaScript, ECMAScript 5, where you can see Safari delivers 80% faster performance.
All my friends think I'm crazy.
Now, in addition to being tremendously fast, Safari also helps give you a serene browsing experience. Now, you know, sometimes you go to read an article, and instead of finding something to read, you get this. Just some loud audio and video that auto-plays and disrupts your whole reading vibe. Well, now, don't worry about it, because we have autoplay blocking in Safari.
Interesting that they're building in autoplay blocking into Safari. Google has been talking about doing similar things with Chrome.
It shouldn't be playing video and puts you in control. You can always push play. Now, Safari is also key in respecting your privacy. Now, have you ever had this experience where you go to buy something on the web, you know, even complete the purchase, and then it seems like everywhere you go on the web, it just follows you around? Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like you're being tracked. And that's because you are. No longer, because Safari has intelligent tracking prevention. Safari uses machine learning to identify trackers, segregate the cross-site scripting data, put it away, so now your privacy, your browsing history is your own. It's not about blocking ads. The web behaves as it always did, but your privacy is protected. Next, I want to talk about some refinements to mail, and it starts with search. So in addition to providing searches based on recency, search in Mail is now using Spotlight to identify your top hits. So the message you're looking for is almost always right there at the top. And if you're into using Mail in full screen, well, now we support split view for your compose window. It's a great way to compose mail. And Mail is more efficient than ever. It actually uses 35% less disk space for storing your mail. Now, probably our biggest area of refinement in High Sierra is in Photos. Now, Photos has some great new organization and editing tools. There's a persistent sidebar and a new view that has all your imports in chronological order. And in any view up here in the upper right, you can filter by your keywords, by your favorites, by just media types like video. So it's really easy to get to just what you're looking for. We've also improved faces. It recognizes far more faces automatically using advanced convolutional neural networks. And when you put effort into categorizing and naming people, well, that's now synchronized automatically across all your devices. Now, we also have some great enhancements to editing inside of Photos. You can see here on the right-hand side, all of your editing tools are arrayed, and there are a bunch of great new ones, including Curves, which allows you to fine-tune the color and contrast in your image, and Selective Color, which lets you modify color in a selective range. And I think you're going to like this one, because if you like to do edits in a pro tool like Pixelmator or Photoshop, well, now when you punch out to that other editing tool, all of your edits automatically synchronize right back to your photo library. Now, Apple pioneered printed books based on projects you construct right inside of the photo application. And now we're opening this up to third parties. They're going to offer some amazing new printing services, full framed wall-mounted photos, and even publishing websites, all based on projects right inside of Photos. So those are some quick refinements, but I want to return to the main story now, and that's technology, because we've gone deep on the fundamentals, data, video, and graphics. And when it comes to data, the fundamentals are in the file system. Now, the Mac file system has its roots, actually, HFS, from 30 years ago. Well, a lot has changed since then. We have a lot of flash drives. Our storage is a billion times larger, and it's time for a more modern file system. So I'm pleased to announce that we're bringing the Apple file system to macOS as our new default.
This was a rumored move, and definitely makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Now, APFS is a thoroughly modern file system, 64-bit top to bottom. It's safe and secure with built-in crash protection and native encryption. And it's ultra-responsive with modern features like instant file and directory cloning and high-performance parallelized metadata operations. Now, what does that really mean in practice? Well, let's take a look at a simple file duplication inside of Sierra. So we're going to go up to the file menu, select duplicate on these very large video files, and it's going to copy. And just like you'd expect, there's a lot of data to be copied here, so it takes a little while. Just about done. There we go. Now let's watch that in High Sierra. Well, we're going to go up to the file menu, we're going to subduplicate, and we're done.
So the APFS is already in iOS, right? That mm-hmm. was the mm-hmm. iOS 10.3, and it definitely speeds up your phone.
Video.
Definitely speeds up your
now,
phone.
The current
should make it, you would think, easier
to,
for
fact,
developers
H.264
to make apps for
really
both operating systems as well.
The revolution of streaming HD video on the internet. But of course, the game has moved from HD to 4K and 4K high dynamic range video. And there's a new standard to support this. It's H.265 or HEVC. And you want your video to look great, preserve all the detail and color, and HEVC does it while saving up to 40% better compression than H.264. Now, we're building in software encoder support into High Sierra for all Macs and hardware acceleration of HEVC for the newest Macs. And we're also building it into Pro Tools like Final Cut, Motion, and Compressor. Now I want to return to our main story, which is graphics. And graphics are all about the GPU. The GPU has been the performance superstar of the last decade, delivering incredible gains in computational performance. Now, our API for high-performance graphics is Metal, and developers have taken amazing advantage to Metal. This is Dawn of War 3 from Feral Interactive, incredible graphics. This is DaVinci Resolve from Blackmagic, which can accelerate many editing operations. And of course, we even use Metal inside of Photos for doing machine learning and identifying your photos. But we've learned a lot working with developers on their adoption of Metal, and we have a new version to announce today. You'll never guess what we called it.
Heavy Metal?
It's Metal 2.
Damn.
Now, Metal 2,
Metal 2 makes
is
a lot
tremendously
more sense.
Fast. In fact, it has great optimizations and new APIs that, when adopted, deliver another 10 times improvement in draw call throughput. Now, some of you remember when Metal first came out, it itself had a 10 times improvement over OpenGL. You can multiply those numbers together. That's 100 times improvement. Now, we've also provided better debugging and performance analysis tools for you to optimize your app for Metal. And we're so excited about the advances in Metal 2 that we've taken the Mac Windows Server and put it on top of Metal, accelerating things like Mission Control. And some of our most challenging system animations are now buttery smooth all the time. Now, Metal is not just about graphics. We're also using it for machine learning. Can now accelerate, yes, we have Metal performance shaders that accelerate all kinds of deep learning algorithms. Now, another piece of Metal news today is Metal for external graphics. So, you know our MacBooks have this tremendous balance of portability and power. But sometimes, for some workflows, you need even more power. You want to take advantage of the incredible Thunderbolt I/O on your MacBook Pros to access external graphics. So we're going to be making this possible in Metal 2. Now we're starting with the developer kit that'll be available today. You can actually order a Thunderbolt 3 enclosure with a high-performance AMD GPU and tune your apps for high-performance external graphics. And then we'll be rolling out support to all of our customers in the months to come. Now, with this graphics power, we're really doubling down on our focus on pro content creation. And that's increasingly about VR content creation.
I was hoping they would talk about VR.
And so we're bringing Metal for VR to High Sierra.
We're showing it next to an HTC Vive headset.
Now, Metal is delivering a VR-optimized display pipeline that provides extremely high performance. And we're optimizing our pro apps like Final Cut for doing things like editing spherical video right inside the VR environment. We're also working with Valve. They're bringing the Steam VR SDK to the Mac. And we work with Unity and Unreal to bring their engines for VR to the Mac. It's really cool, and you might just be seeing a little bit more from us later today on this topic. So that's a quick look at macOS. Some great technologies with the Apple File System, HEVC video, and incredible graphics with Metal 2, support for external graphics, and VR support on the Mac. And of course, a bunch of fantastic refinements. Now, macOS High Sierra is available for all of you today as a developer beta. And if you sign up at beta.apple.com, we'll also have a public beta available later this month. And of course, it's shipping to everyone as a free upgrade this fall on all systems that support Sierra. Now, that's your update on macOS High Sierra, and I'm going to turn it over to our Vice President of Hardware Engineering, John Ternus, to tell you more about the Mac. Thank you.
What do you think he was hinting at that we're going to see later in VR?
Well, hopefully at least a demo of Vive, but maybe something compatible with a new Mac Pro or these new MacBook Pros if they do come.
We have great updates to talk about today that span much of the Mac product line. And let's begin with the iMac. Now, the iMac has been the gold standard of desktops for many years, but we're going to raise the bar once again. And as always on the iMac, it starts with the display. Because the 4K and 5K Retina iMac displays, with their high resolution, excellent brightness, and P3 color gamut, are the best displays on any desktop. But we're going to make them even better. So these new displays are now going to be 500 nits. That's 43% brighter than the previous generation. And for the first time, we're going to support 10-bit dithering, which means these displays can reproduce up to a billion colors. So your content is going to look more true to life than ever before. Now, in addition, we've got some great internal updates for these iMacs. So we'll start with the CPU, because the whole line is moving to Intel's 7th generation core processor, also known as Kaby Lake. Now, Kaby Lake gets us better bass and turbo frequencies for more performance, as well as hardware-based 10-bit HEVC decode, which is great for playing back high-quality video. In addition, these iMacs are getting a boost when it comes to memory capacity. So the 21.5-inch systems can now be configured with up to 32 gigs of memory, and the 27-inch can go all the way up to 64 gigabytes of memory. Both of those are twice what the previous generation could do. Now, fast storage has always been a key part of the iMac, and so we're going to now make our Fusion Drive standard on all 27-inch configs. And it's also going to be standard on the high-end 21.5-inch config as well. In addition, our SSD options are going to be up to 50% faster and now available up to 2 terabytes. And the iMacs are getting an I/O upgrade as well, because we're giving them 2 USB-C connectors which support Thunderbolt 3. And we think our customers, especially our pro users, are really going to love this, because you can do some cool things, like hook up a high-performance RAID array and an external 5K display at the same time. So now let's talk about graphics. And as you heard earlier, we're investing heavily in graphics software technologies like Metal 2. Well, we're also investing in graphics hardware. And every configuration in this new iMac line is going to get a big bump in its graphics performance. So we'll start with the entry-level iMac. Now, this system gets a boost in its integrated GPU by way of Intel's Iris Plus graphics, which now has 64 megabytes of DRAM. And the performance that we're getting out of this is pretty amazing, because this system is up to 80% faster in graphics than the previous generation. Now, next up is the 21.5-inch iMac with Retina 4K display. And the big news here is that we're going to be moving to discrete graphics and making it standard on all 4K iMacs. And that's going to come, there you go, and that's going to come in this Radeon Pro Series GPUs with up to 4 gigabytes of VRAM. And again, this move to discrete graphics yields a pretty spectacular performance increase, because this new system is up to 3 times faster than the previous generation for graphics. Now, lastly, we have our 27-inch iMac, and this is our most popular desktop for our pro customers. So obviously, it's going to get a bump in graphics today as well. So it's going to have these Radeon Pro 500 series GPUs with up to 8 gigabytes of VRAM. And again, we get a great performance uplift. In fact, this 27-inch iMac can now deliver up to 5.5 teraflops of graphics compute, which makes it a great platform for VR content creation. In fact, we've seeded some developers with this new iMac in High Sierra so that we can see what they can do with virtual reality on the Mac. And I'm really excited that we can give you a demo of some of this amazing work right now. So I'd like to invite up on the stage, here from Industrial Light and Magic, is Academy Award-winning visual effects artist and chief creative officer, John Knoll. John?
Thank you, John. At Lucasfilm's ILMX lab, story, concept design, and technical development are all intertwined. They come together for us to create immersive experiences for people to enjoy at home, in cinemas, and at theme parks. Now, I've always done my art and development on a Mac, so I'm really excited about these new iMacs. I truly love the platform, so I'm especially excited to be able to share some of our VR content created on these new iMacs in Epic's Unreal Engine. I'm joined by Lauren Ridge, an Epic programmer, who will be backstage driving our demo. Working together, we can work in real time to create an immersive experience as we step inside the Star Wars universe. Now, Lauren's backstage so we can show you the environment around her.
And now, we're going to show you from my perspective. Here we are on the planet Mustafar. Thanks to the native VR support in macOS High Sierra, I can use Unreal Engine's editor to create content inside the VR experience. And for the first time, it's all powered by my Mac. On my left motion controller, I have my radial menu, which acts as my artist palette. And on the right, I have the laser I use to interact with the world. I have some fire here, so let's try that out.
All right, very nice. Let's do some set dressing. What do you have?
Let's see. Let me open my content browser. It has all the assets I need to dress my scene. I think I saw a good landing spot for an Imperial shuttle over here, so let's bring one of those in. We've actually set up these smart assets so they know exactly where to come in for their landing.
Great. All right. Can we go wide?
Sure. I can grab onto a little 2 hands and scale myself up. I can also use this to rotate the world around me.
Oh, very cool.
I have a TIE fighter here, too, so let's bring one of those in. Thanks to more than 5.5 teraflops of GPU performance, manipulating objects is super smooth and really intuitive.
Great. All right, can we have a squadron of those flying overhead?
Okay. What about from over there on the horizon to over there by the castle?
Great. Perfect. Okay.
All right, let me teleport back down.
Oh, hey, seeing the castle back there reminds me we're missing one important element.
Right. How could I forget?
All right. Nice. Boy, it looks really good silhouetted against the sky back there. Can we go in closer?
Sure thing. It's really cool how Metal 2 unlocks Unreal's advanced rendering feature set on the Mac.
Wow, you're breathing into really the mic, nice. Thing. All right, let's play this scene from here.
Okay.
Just kidding. That was Darth Vader.
Oh, he's upset. That's the third one this week.
For those who are listening and not able to see this, we have a crashed TIE fighter. Now a squadron of TIE fighters flying overhead. Darth Vader is checking out the scene below, and it's all in VR with an HTC Vive headset.
Whoa. I'm glad he didn't see me there.
Wouldn't be so sure about that. All right, actually, let's stop it right there.
That was a close one.
as a gamer and a VR enthusiast, does this excite you?
Yeah, I mean, if VR is really going to catch on, it needs to be available on Macs, on Windows PCs, you know, more accessible platforms like video game consoles and your phones and things like that. So this is a big deal. Apple's late on it, but it's still a niche thing, so it hasn't gone mainstream yet, and this is a great time to jump in.
Metal 2 and Unreal's our Epic's Unreal Engine will enable the next generation of storytellers. We use this technology in our filmmaking every day for virtual set scouting, for art direction, and shot design. And that means that this immersive content can be made by the same people that bring you the films. That's incredibly powerful. At Lucasfilm and ILMX Lab, we're looking forward to using our Macs to create new experiences as we invite people everywhere to step inside our stories. Thank you.
What's cool about this demo, too, is, okay, it showed off a little bit of what could be called gameplay, but it showed them building the world in real time, so there's creative possibilities there, too. So this is something that could be good for game makers, filmmakers, not just people looking for entertainment like gamers.
They have the best Mac displays we've ever made. Faster processors, higher memory capacity, super fast storage, Thunderbolt 3, and as you saw, incredible graphics performance. So here's the line, but there's one more change, because we're going to bring even more value to the iMac product line. For the first time ever, we're going to have a 4K iMac that starts at just $1,299.
$200 price cut, not bad.
But the updates don't stop with just the iMac, because we're refreshing our notebooks today as well. And together, the MacBook and MacBook Pro make up the strongest line of notebooks we've ever had. But we're going to make them even better, because we're moving to Kaby Lake here as well. And we're bringing faster SSDs to our MacBook and faster standard graphics to the 15-inch MacBook Pro. So a great performance bump across the board. So here's that lineup. But just like the iMac, we're going to bring more value here as well, because we're going to have a new configuration of the 13-inch MacBook Pro that also starts at just $1,299. So there you have it. We've updated 7 of our most popular Macs, and the MacBook Air is going to get a bump in megahertz as well. And even better, they're all shipping today.
A little vague on what the MacBook Air update would be, and no mention
now,
of the Mac Pro yet.
We care deeply about the environment, and so as with all our products, we've been working really hard to ensure that these new Macs are free of harmful chemicals, very energy efficient, and highly recyclable. So that's everything we're updating today. But it's not actually everything we want to show you today. Now, the iMac line has incredible breadth. It spans from an entry-level system that's perfect for use at home or in a school, all the way up through that powerhouse 27-inch model, which allows professional customers to create amazing things every day. But that said, there's another class of pro users who would love to be able to take advantage of the iMac's display and design, but they need workstation-class performance that can't possibly fit into an all-in-one. Well, we wanted to challenge that assumption, and so we've been working really hard to see just how far we can push the iMac. Now, this isn't going to be shipping until the end of the year, but I'm really excited to be able to give you a sneak peek at what we've been up to. And here it is.
All right, this should be the new Mac Pro, as rumored, we'll see. Or an iMac Pro, maybe, or... And it is an iMac Pro.
Cool. So that is the new iMac Pro. Now, the first thing you'll notice is it features the same great design as our 27-inch iMac, but it's in this seriously badass space gray finish.
There's a space gray keyboard and mouse along
with that. Gorgeous 5K display. This is without a doubt the most beautiful iMac we've ever made. But it's also going to be, by far, the most powerful iMac we've ever made. In fact, this will be the most powerful Mac we've ever made. Because we actually are going to put workstation-class performance into our incredible 5K iMac design. Now, to do that, the team had to completely rethink the thermal architecture. And they came up with this really efficient dual centrifugal fan solution, which generates significantly more airflow than a traditional iMac. In fact, the iMac Pro has a greater than 80% increase in cooling capacity. So that means we can deliver unbelievable performance while still maintaining the quiet operation you'd expect from an iMac. So let's talk about what's inside, and I want to start with the CPU because we wanted to go really big here. So the iMac Pro is going to ship with an 8-core Xeon processor. But it's also going to ship with a 10-core Xeon processor. And then we thought, you know, we've gone this far. Let's get really nutty. So we're going to offer it with up to 18 cores. That is a ton of compute power. But we didn't want to stop there because we wanted to go really big on graphics as well. So the iMac Pro is going to use AMD's Radeon Vega graphics. This is their brand new workstation class graphics architecture. It features a completely new GPU core and high bandwidth on package memory. It's going to be available with up to 16 gigabytes of VRAM and over 400 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth. And we aren't going to use an entry-level configuration here because our implementation is going to offer up to 11 teraflops of single precision compute power. That's 3 times more than the best GPU in a Mac Pro. But it actually gets even better because this Radeon Vega GPU can also do half precision compute. So that means the iMac Pro can deliver up to 22 teraflops of half-precision computation. This is a really big deal for things like machine learning development. So the iMac Pro, as you can see, is going to be a monster when it comes to graphics, but we didn't want to stop there either. So we're going to let you configure it with up to 128 gigabytes of ECC memory. That's twice what you can do in a standard 27-inch iMac.
Well, that's a lot of memory.
And up to 4 terabytes of 3 gigabyte per second SSD. Now, the iMac Pro is also going to have a full complement of high-performance I.O., including 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, and for the first time ever in any Mac, built-in 10 gigabit Ethernet. And with all that cutting-edge I.O., you can do some pretty amazing things. Like you can hook up 2 5K displays and 2 high-performance RAID arrays. No iMac before could ever do that. And when you combine that with the internal display, that means the iMac Pro can drive up to 44 million pixels. There's so much more we don't even have time to get into. Things like a 1080p FaceTime camera, a user-configurable VESA mount option, 2 times wider AVX instructions, and even a UHS-2 SD card slot. So with all these high-performance technologies and our incredible 5K display, this iMac Pro is going to be an awesome workstation for things like real-time 3D rendering, high frame rate immersive VR, machine learning development, and with all those cores and all that memory, super fast code compiling. Now, speaking of workstations, we wanted to compare the starting configuration of the iMac Pro to what's on the market. And so if you were to go out and build a comparably spec system today, it would cost over $7,000. And keep in mind, that's a system that doesn't have our best-in-class 5K display, doesn't have the iMac Pro's incredible all-in-one design, and it obviously doesn't run Mac OS. Well, this is the starting configuration of the iMac Pro, and we're going to price it at just $49.99. And it's going to be available in December. So that's a sneak peek at the iMac Pro. It packs workstation-class performance into our incredible 27-inch iMac design with its gorgeous 5K display. And it is going to be the most powerful Mac we have ever made. So that is all of our Mac news today. Now back to Tim.
So that's exciting. $5,000 for the most powerful Mac ever made coming in December.
Yep. And it looks like it will replace the Mac Pro. Going to the Mac Pro website right now, it says we'll be back. You can't even figure out how much it is.
Mac Pro is really badass. All right. Next up. Let's talk about iOS. The world's best and most advanced mobile operating system. Our customers love the latest version, iOS 10, which has an industry-leading 96% customer satisfaction. And it's absolutely incredible that 86% of our customers are running iOS 10 and taking advantages of its capabilities. This blows away the other platforms that suffer from horrible fragmentation.
Tim Cook putting up a graphic showing that Android 7 is at 7% install base compared to 86% for iOS 10.
Developers can always target the latest capabilities and features of our latest operating system and be confident that there's customers there for them. Now, today, we're going to take the world's best and most advanced mobile operating system and turn it up to 11.
there's a lot of like dad jokes in this presentation. There's a lot of really corny jokes.
Take you through it. Craig.
I kind of love it.
Dad jokes or weed jokes now? Is that where we are?
Dad jokes and weed jokes, depending if your dad's Greg Federighi.
11. It's a big one. Now, we have a big focus on technologies in iOS 11, but also some really big features. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to start with messages. Now, you all know in iOS 10, we added iMessage apps and stickers.
More stickers.
People had a lot of fun with these. And now in iOS 11, we're making them more discoverable than ever with this redesigned app drawer. You can see you have your apps accessible right there at the bottom of the screen with just a tap. You can bring them up, scroll through them, and tap into any app. It's really easy. It's going to make it a lot of fun for you to use your apps and stickers. Now, the big story with messages, though, is messages in iCloud. Because now, with your iMessages in iCloud, when you sign in to another new device, well, all of your conversations are automatically synchronized. And in fact, they stay in sync. So if you want to delete an embarrassing message that you don't want in your transcript, well, it goes away everywhere, which is kind of nice. So this, of course, allows us to optimize your device storage, because with your messages in the cloud, we only need to keep your most recent messages cached on the device. And so that makes for smaller and faster backups. Now, this is available for iOS and the Mac. And of course, your messages remain end-to-end encrypted. Next, Apple Pay. So we love using Apple Pay to buy things at retail. In fact, Apple Pay is the number one contactless payment service on mobile devices. And by the end of the year, it'll be available in more than 50% of retailers here in the U.S. Yeah. But in addition to paying at retail, we use Apple Pay in apps. We use it in the web. And there was one final frontier we wanted to conquer, and that's Apple Pay for person-to-person payments.
Mm-hmm. Venmo or
mm-hmm.
PayPal, that is useful.
Venmo, PayPal, Square Cash, it's a big market for this.
Now, it's super simple because it's integrated right in to Messages as an iMessage app.
Oh, interesting that they're building it into Messages and not a separate standalone app. That's actually pretty smart.
Yeah. So that's where you're talking about payments.
Money right in your transcript. Messages. Of course, when you send it, you authenticate securely with Touch ID. And if you receive money with iMessage, it goes into your Apple Pay Cash card. And from there, well, you can send it on to friends and family if you're charitable. You can make Apple Pay purchases at retail or on the web. And, of course, you can pull it out and transfer it to your bank. And it's available across all these iOS devices and Apple Watch, too.
Thank you. That's really interesting.
Yeah, useful. Worth mentioning, Facebook is doing its peer-to-peer payments inside of Facebook Messenger as well.
Now, they've been doing that for a while.
Monthly. Mm-hmm. For more than 375 million devices. It's absolutely huge. And it's available in more languages and more countries than any other assistant. 21 languages in 36 countries. So for iOS 11, we're making a big upgrade to your primary interface in dealing with Siri. And that's Siri's voice. We've used deep learning now to create a really natural and expressive voice for Siri, and I'd like you to hear it.
Oh, Siri's got a new voice.
Here's the forecast for the next 10 days. Sunny, and sunny.
Three different ways to say sunny. Very powerful. Now, Siri
sounds a lot more natural
and
less robotic.
It sounds fantastic, too.
I love machine learning, especially since I'm a machine learning.
So Siri has a great new visual interface as well. And it's able to provide you with follow-up questions and answers with just a tap and multiple results when you make a query. It's really handy. Now, Siri also has a new capability, just translation. So you can now ask something like, how do you say, what are the most popular dishes in your restaurant in Chinese? And Siri can say,
你们餐厅有哪些菜最受欢迎?
Totally.
So that's something Google Assistant has had for a while, which is super useful.
But Google Assistant doesn't always get the translations
now,
right.
Translation
we'll see how accurate Siri is,
English
but...
...to Chinese, French, German, Italian, and Spanish, and we'll have more language combinations coming in the months to come. Now, when it comes to using Siri to access your other applications, we have SiriKit, and SiriKit can now do more than ever in iOS 11. So now, you can do task management by using Siri to make tasks in OmniFocus or Things, take notes in Evernote, do banking in City Mobile, or even bring up a QR code in WeChat. Now, Siri isn't just a voice assistant, because with Siri Intelligence, Siri not only understands your voice, it understands the context. It understands your interests. It understands how you use your device. And this allows it to ultimately understand what you want next. Now, we've all experienced this where Siri can help us predict what apps we might want to use next, give us a time to leave notification based on our calendar and where we are, help us respond to a text message. In iOS 11, Siri uses on-device learning to understand more about topics of interest to us. So it can actually suggest topics we might be interested in learning about in news. It can help us respond with our location for getting to an appointment to someone in messages, and even help us make a calendar appointment based on something we've just booked inside of Safari on the web. And what Siri learns about you on-device is now kept synced across all of your devices. So you're dealing with one Siri. But of course, this is kept completely private, readable only by you and your devices.
And of course, that level of end-to-end encryption for that specific type of data isn't something Google's offering, because they're uploading all their stuff to the cloud.
The camera. People love the fantastic cameras in the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. And in fact, our customers now take a trillion photos per year. It's absolutely amazing. And they take a lot of video, too. And today, they do it in H.264. But now, with our latest iPhones and iOS 7, we're using HEVC, which is giving us up to 2 times better compression for camera-captured videos, which means less storage space used on your device and less space used in the cloud. And we're applying these same techniques to replace JPEG capture with what we call HEIF, High Efficiency Image Format. It's based on HEVC, and it also provides awesome quality images at half the size on your device.
And those photo and video formats should open the door to higher resolution levels for future cameras as well. Especially
and of course,
HDR
you can still
and 5K
share
and like
completely compatibly with others. Now, with the iPhone 7 Plus, we love taking these beautiful portrait photos. And now, with iOS 11, we can take low-light photographs using optical image stabilization, True Tone Flash, HDR, delivers incredible image quality. And we're taking the depth information that we can capture with 2 cameras and exposing it to developers with a new depth API, which has allowed them to do incredibly fun and artistic photos like this using the depth API. Now, when you're done taking your photos, you go to enjoy them in the Photos app. And one of the ways I love enjoying them is with the Memories feature, because Memories is able to scan my library and find all kinds of fun events, and now it can do more than ever. It uses machine learning to identify things like sporting events, even weddings, anniversaries, memories of your babies. It's really great. And when you go to play those back, you can see them not just in normal landscape orientation, but now watch them in portrait, taking full advantage of the height of your display. Now, when it comes to live photos, we have some great enhancements as well. So you can now trim your live photos, the video around the still. You can mark any part of the video as your key photo and so much more. So these
muting
are some of
the
big features
photos.
In
That's
iOS 11.
That's a feature I'd wanted.
There's
a lot of people
one
get
other, which is a major
you know, things recorded they don't want recorded.
To Control yep. Center. Rather than show it in slides, how about we do a demo? All right, let's take our first live look. No, I don't want to do that. Let's take our first live look at iOS 11.
I'm going to take a
second
to
just bring up Control Center, as always.
Stop and thank our sponsor, Texture. I use Texture on my iPad and my iPhone. It's basically any magazine that you'd ever want. You can put in your favorites. You can read whatever magazine you want without having that big pile of magazines sitting by the stack of, you know, in a giant stack.
Yeah, a lot easier to read through a bunch of them on your tablet mm-hmm. than to have to, like, you know, manage that.
Right. So, yeah, I use Texture when I want to be alone and just do things for myself. So I open my Texture app and I look at all the magazines that I want. They have Rolling Stones, Mother Jones, Entertainment Weekly, Real Simple, Dwell, Vanity Fair. You can click on your favorites. You can create little groups of topics. Like if you want to declutter your house, you can get all of the articles in all these different magazines that are good for decluttering and then read them all at once. Or if you want to read about the latest tech gadgets, there's lots of tech magazines. There's Apple magazines. They have, of course, Wired. There's cooking magazines if you want to get the latest recipes. It makes it easy to find and enjoy the articles that you want to read with daily recommendations, exclusive interactive features. They even have videos. So use Texture to access not just your favorite magazines, but the latest and greatest in investigative journalism, U.S. politics, domestic and international news. The Texture app is entirely digital, so it's an environmentally friendly way to consume the best magazines and articles. If you are looking for a Father's Day gift, this is a great gift. It's normally $9.99 a month, and you get over 200 magazines. But right now, Texture is offering our audience a 14-day free trial when you go to texture.com/twit. That's 14 days to try Texture for free when you go to texture.com/twit. So if you're thinking about getting it for the dad in your life, try it. See if you think they will like it. You can try it for 14 days for free. And I think it makes a great gift. And we thank Texture for supporting this Twit Live special.
Now we're looking at some changes to live photos with some HDR modes as well. They're calling this bounce, but it does kind of look a little bit like that Instagram feature was a boomerang.
Artistic things mm-hmm. with live photos as well. So you see, this is a shot where we have still landscape, but then this movement in the water. Now, if you wanted to capture this kind of motion, traditionally you'd have to get a tripod and figure out how to configure a long exposure on your high-end camera. But now, you can actually just go into the effects here and select long exposure and check it out. It's really gorgeous. Now, let's take a quick look at memories, because you see, memories can now capture things like activities, like scuba diving. Can spot your anniversaries, these really touching memories of your children growing up, and most importantly, your pets. Let's play a movie about these pets. And what we'll see is that we play them, of course, traditionally here in landscape, which is a great way to watch video. And of course, memories is using computer vision to actually identify photos of your pet and pick the best scenes. Now, what's great is I can also rotate my phone now into portrait, and it automatically reformats to take full advantage of the height of the display. And that's a quick look at memories. Now, with memories, we're using machine learning to help learn more about you and what you're interested in by looking at your photo library. But now in iOS 11, Siri does so much more in learning how you're using your device. So for instance, if I'm in Safari here and I'm reading about Iceland, maybe I'm considering taking a trip there. There's Reykjavik as a nice location. Well, now Siri actually on my device spots my interest. So when I go, let's say, into news, Siri automatically surfaces for me a recommendation that I might be interested in news about Iceland. I can just tap in and heart this one like this. And if I tap into a particular article, we can see it mentions certain locations in Iceland. I think this one is called Snæfellsnes. I hope it's okay with anyone who speaks Icelandic. But what's great is now Siri is learning this vocabulary. He knows it might be something I'm going to use in my communication in the future. So when I go into messages and start typing a message, and let's say I start typing Reykjavik, well, check it out. It learns that Reykjavik is probably a word I might type. And what about, there it is, Snæfellsnes. Pretty awesome. Now, let's take a look at stickers, because you notice now, right on the bottom of the display, we have access to all my sticker packs. I can tap in on the bottom here to my Star Wars sticker pack. I can tap and slide
say select music, and we now have Apple Pay right here as a messages app. But what's so cool is if I receive a message saying that I owe someone money, well, you notice the QuickType keyboard automatically surfaces Apple Pay as an option and picks the amount out as what I might want to pay. I can just tap the pay button, send, and authenticate with my fingerprint, and just like that, I've paid with Apple Pay. And that is a quick demo of iOS 11. But wait, there is more. It starts with maps. Now, in iOS 10, maps brought beautiful new clarity to navigation. And we're now giving you enhanced information for when you get there to the mall. So we have detailed floor plans now of malls with place cards, directory, and search. And we let you browse by floor. Now, we're going to be supporting malls in all of these cities out the gate and hundreds more per month thereafter. And we're also bringing the support to major airports. You can see where security is so you can plan.
And the cities he named were Boston, Hong Kong, Chicago, New York, a lot of major cities in the U.S. and China.
Start, and again, and building Canada out as well. More over time. And of course, we have more improvements to navigation. So now in the upper left, you can even see your speed limit. I hope you're paying attention to that. And lane guidance, so you know which lane to be in to make your next move when navigating. Now, we know in addition to navigation, people like to do more with their phones sometimes while driving. And our safest solution for doing this is CarPlay. It lets you keep your eyes on the road while you're doing things like asking Siri to play music. Well, we wanted to bring this same level of safety to everyone who maybe doesn't have one of the 200 models of car that currently support CarPlay. And we're building on the Do Not Disturb with a new feature we call Do Not Disturb While Driving. And it's all about keeping your eyes on the road. When you're driving, you don't need to be responding to these kinds of messages. In fact, you don't need to see them. So now, when you install iOS 11, we're going to use Bluetooth to understand if you're connected to a car, or even if you don't have Bluetooth, we're going to use Wi-Fi Doppler effect to measure that you're moving in a car. And when you finish that first drive, we're going to suggest, hey, how about we activate Do Not Disturb while driving? And when we do, instead of seeing all those notifications, we have this new user interface for you.
I wonder if this will extend over to the Apple Watch, too, because sometimes I'm driving, yeah. My watch is buzzing, and it's Twitter notifications that I don't want to be looking at.
This is like Android Auto.
Now, if you're tempted and you try to turn on your phone, you're actually going to receive this. Little reminder that you're not receiving notifications while you're driving. But, of course, you might be sitting in the back seat, in which case you can tell us, I'm not driving, and you can get through. But what if you are driving and someone sends you a message? Well, they can now get an automatic response saying, I'll see your message when I get where I'm going. And you can also enable select people to break through if it's especially urgent. You can have the peace of mind that you can get contacted, and they can reply urgent, and that message will go through. We think this is going to be a real important step in safety in the car.
This is my favorite thing they've announced because I think it will be really useful. People will not like it, but it will save people's lives.
Next super up, practical, HomeKit. Super useful.
So HomeKit provides a secure and private way to automate all of your devices, your home accessories, and you can do it right inside the Home app and control them here, and also, of course, use your voice with Siri. Now, almost all the major accessory makers are providing great HomeKit accessories across all of these categories, from security cameras and door locks to lights and fans. But there's one category really close to our heart that we wanted to add to HomeKit, and that's speakers. So, you'll now be able to configure your speakers inside of HomeKit and access them via our new AirPlay 2 protocol. It builds multi-room audio in throughout iOS.
Hope this works with Sonos, because I selfishly have them, but Apple also sells Sonos speakers in their stores.
So you can play music to select speakers throughout your home, right from the music app. And with Apple Music, we have a new feature called Share It Up Next. So if you have a friend over and you have a playlist going, and maybe your friend wants to contribute to that playlist, well, they can do that without interrupting the music. You all can pile into that party playlist. Now, all these speaker makers have announced upcoming support
for AirPlay 2.
So DVLA, Bose, Bang & Olufsen, Beats, Polk, Bowers Wilkins, Denon. Speaker,
and those are the ones connected to our Apple TV. Because now your so Apple nice. TV can be played to from your iPhone or iOS device and Mac anywhere in the home. And, of course, if you turn on your Apple TV, it can control playback home-wide, including using Siri. And we're providing a great developer API so third-party audio apps and iOS can all get in on the multi-room audio fun. Next is Apple Music. Now, last fall, we introduced an all-new design for Apple Music, which brought greater clarity and simplicity to the Apple Music experience. And we now have 27 million customers who are really enjoying the curation as well as the personalization of Apple Music. But, of course, a lot of the way we discover music is to ask one of our friends, what have you been listening to lately? So now in Apple Music, you'll be able to find out right inside the application.
Oh, this reminds me so much of Audio. It was a feature that I used to love about that now deceased music app.
Served up, and for you, you'll see indicators if this is music your friends are listening to. And they can configure their profile either to be public or private and control what playlists they share or whether all the music they share they want to make available to their other friends. Now, for developers, we're also providing a new API, MusicKit, for Apple Music. This allows apps full access to the Apple Music service, both on-device and from your cloud service. And you can do a tremendous amount with this. Now, Nike has done great exercise playlists using the full Apple Music catalog. With Anchor, anyone can be a DJ using all 40 million songs. And Shazam can automatically add songs to your collection that it identifies. But you know, one of the biggest stories today for iOS 11 is about the App Store. Now, to give you the big news with the App Store, I'd like to hand it off to Phil Schiller. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Well, good morning, everyone. Let's hear it from the way back of the room. Come on, good morning, everyone. Yes. I am so excited to be able to talk to you this morning about the App Store. The App Store is turning 9 years old, and it is going so well. There are 500 million weekly visitors to the App Store who come to see your amazing apps and to download them. They have now downloaded over 180 billion apps to date. That's incredible. That does not include auto redownloads and updates. Amazing. And just recently we passed $70 billion paid out to developers to date.
Yes. That was announced a few days ago, actually last week.
30% of that in the last year alone. The apps are incredible. And customers are doing things with them that none of us had ever imagined. Like this. These are people in Hong Kong playing Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go is from Niantic. It was one of the big hits from last year. And there have been a lot of big hits last year from big developers and indie developers alike. And together, the developers and Apple, we've made this the best app platform in the world. So thank you. Yes. Thank you for the incredible apps you make that we and our customers all love. It's not by chance that the App Store has become such a great place. From the beginning, we've had two very important goals: to make the App Store a trusted and safe place for users, and to make it a great opportunity for all developers. We continue to work really hard at that. Over the last year, the team's done a lot of great things to make the App Store an even better store for all of us. There's many things we can talk about, but I think one stands head and shoulders above the rest: faster app review times. Yeah. I'm sure you're well aware that the majority of apps are all now reviewed in under 24 hours, many in just 1 to 2 hours. The team is going to keep working hard at that. And we have a lot more coming for the remainder of the year. I've highlighted a bunch of things here. I'll just point out one of them. You can read some of your favorite things up there. A big request from developers is called phased releases. That when you woo for phased releases, come on. Phased releases means when you submit an app, you can choose if you want it to be phased over time so it doesn't hit your infrastructure all at once, and you can see how customers are responding to that update. So it's really a great feature for you to take advantage of. And there are a lot of things coming this year, but there is one that is incredibly gigantic. And that is, we're going to do something that we've never done before in the 9 years of the App Store. We're going to completely redesign it. A brand new App Store. It is absolutely beautiful. The App Store starts with a brand new tab called Today. Now, do you remember back the first time you started downloading apps when you used the App Store and it was so much fun to go in every single day and discover the new apps that were appearing? I mean, that's an amazing feeling. And we're bringing that back again with this brand new tab called Today, a whole new way to discover apps. It's a place where we can feature the apps we all love and the stories about the developers who created them. It's going to be such a great place for customers to discover your apps every single day. There's another new tab, games. Games, the biggest area of the App Store, has its own dedicated space now. So for all of us who love gaming and finding the best featured games of the day and seeing charts about gaming, this is now a place to go to experience all that's happening with games. And not only can we feature games, but for the first time in the App Store, we can feature in-app purchases as well. A big part of your business is now there in the App Store, so the next time you have a brand new level, you have a brand new character, customers can see them right in the App Store and click on them and start the process to get them right away. And since games have their own tab, now apps have their own tab. This is everything that we love about apps besides games, with dedicated features and charts all there for customers to enjoy. And every app and every game, of course, has its own product page in the store. These are more beautiful than ever, more engaging with incredible videos. You're going to love all the features on your product pages. And there's sessions here at WWDC to learn how to take advantage of all those great new app page features.
And the apps tab looks like what you see with the home screen of the App Store so far in this redesign.
Apps tab, and would love to show it to you live for the very first time. So please welcome Ann Tai, Product Marketing Manager for the App Store, to the stage. Ann?
So the App Store needs better discoverability. Like, I don't know if tabs are going to do that for me. Like, I need to hear about search.
I'm so excited.
Yeah,
the
Today tab seems like a nod to that, right? Surfacing something, telling you to interact with it, engage with it.
And I land right here on the Today tab, the new front of the App Store that updates every day. The first thing I see is our top story. The world premiere of Monument Valley 2 is finally here.
Oh, I'm a big Monument Valley fan. I'm kind of excited about that.
Let's check it out by tapping on the card. This opens a story view where we can learn more about the game and what makes it so great. Looks like this is going to be even more beautiful than the first.
Now, this is just one story a day. How much this will help with discoverability or not, I guess, remains to be seen.
And here's a cool quote from Dan Gray at Us Two Games about what inspired them. I can share the story with a friend, and what's incredible is that we can actually all download this today, only on the App Store. Let's see what else is happening today. What have we got here? Oh, here's a how-to guide about VSCO. I use this app all the time. Let's check it out. This is packed full of useful tips. So even if you have an app already, you still might learn something new. Like, I didn't know you could use it to make animated GIFs or GIFs. Anyway, you can make them. I just scroll back up and pull down on the card, and I'm back in the feed. Every day, there's a new app of the day and a new game of the day. And the daily list. These are great because they're focused on a theme or a goal, like meditation. I've actually been trying some of these out to get ready for this, and
she's pointing at her it's
totally
stomach because she's pregnant.
If I'm busy and miss a day, I can scroll down and see stories from earlier in the week. So that's the Today tab. If I only want to see games, now I can go to the New Games tab. This is huge. Let's check it out. Up at the top, I can see the biggest new releases or just what the game editors are playing this week. If I scroll down, I can watch a whole bunch of game videos. And it's not just previews, but also tips and gameplay videos by editors, too. If I scroll down, I can see charts that only feature games, so it's really easy to see what the most popular games are separate from apps. And now I can browse by game categories too. This page is just packed full of recommendations. This artsy game looks fun. Let's check it out. I'm gonna tap on the icon and it opens up a redesigned app page. It's more beautiful and more useful. I can watch more videos that show me how fun this is. And this badge at the top tells me it was named Editor's Choice. If I scroll down, I can see ratings and reviews front and center, so I can see what other customers think before making a choice. Like this review. It tells me this game is great for killing time. Thanks, Furious Potato Face. For all the incredible apps on the store, there's a new tab too, the Apps tab. Let's go there. It shares the same great design as the Games tab, but with a focus just on apps.
So what you're seeing here are the sorts of charts that before were in the categories and top charts tabs in the old App Store. Now it's all collapsed under one apps section.
Share apps and games we love with you. Back to you, Phil.
Thank you, Anne. So that's your first glimpse of an entirely new App Store. We hope you love it. We hope customers love it. They visit it every single day to download your incredible apps. And that's it for the App Store. Back to you, Craig.
Interesting move. I mean, the App Store is really a utility for a lot of people, kind of a place where you go to get stuff and you don't hang out in. Having this sort of content changes that a bit, or could.
Features in iOS 11, but of course, it's also core technologies. Now, Metal 2 and HEVC are coming to iOS as well, but there's more, and it starts with machine learning. Now, you've seen the way we've used machine learning throughout the experiences on Apple Watch, for instance, and the predictive Siri watch face. We use it on the iPad for palm rejection when you're writing with Apple Pencil. Of course, we use it to extend your battery life by predicting how you're going to use your device. And you've seen it throughout photos with memories and face recognition. Well, now for all of you developers, we want to make powerful machine learning easy for you to incorporate in your apps. And we're doing it via a set of new APIs. Starts with the Vision API, which provides face tracking, face detection, landmarks, all of these core features we use inside of our apps. And the Natural Language API that provides capabilities like tokenization and named entity recognition. Now, these are all built on Core ML. And Core ML provides high-performance implementations of deep neural networks, recurrent neural networks, convolutional neural networks, support vector machines, and they allow you to take models that you've built with any of these popular third-party tools, and using our machine learning model converter, execute them with tremendous performance on device. It gives you all the data privacy benefits and all of the carefully tuned compatibility with all of our platforms. And the performance really is incredible. You look at this benchmark, it's called Inception V3. It's a popular photo recognition benchmark. iPhone is 6 times faster than Google Pixel and the Samsung S8 using Core ML.
These machine learning features that Craig Federighi just mentioned are similar to what Facebook mentioned for its camera app in terms of like image recognition, text recognition, and some of the text learning that Google's using its cloud TPU for. But this is all happening on device.
And with the camera, we've allowed you to capture the world around you. But when you bring these things together, the results can actually be quite profound. Now, it's called augmented reality, and we have a new core technology called ARKit to bring it to all of you. And I'd like to show it to you in a demo now.
So Facebook is using its camera feature inside its namesake app for AR.
We've all seen a
iPhone,
lot of carefully edited vision videos on this topic recently. But in this case, I'd like to show you something for real. So what we see here is an iPhone that's using its camera, but using computer vision, it's actually able to identify surfaces, such as this table, and I can actually just add an object. This is a developer application, a test application that you'll all be getting code for that allows you to do these things. Now, this is just a virtual object
placed
on this
table. Placed a virtual
table.
Coffee cup there.
Now,
and it's steaming virtually.
Got some steam in there coming off the cup. Now, I can add other objects to the scene, and these things can actually interact. Let's add a lamp. And I want you to watch when I turn the lamp off on the dynamic shadows here. I'm going to move the cup and watch how the shadow
moves in relationship to the light here. It's really pretty incredible. Now,
the coffee did not spill, for the record.
I can add additional objects. Let's add a vase to this scene. I mean, isn't that just incredible? You guys are actually in the shot here with these objects all in augmented reality. So it gives you a little bit of an idea of the technology involved. It's really pretty incredible. Now, how do we do it?
And Google, for its part, had an AI-powered camera as well with some AR features.
And it uses all of the sensors and the camera on your device to do this. It actually finds planes like floors and tables. It's able to estimate ambient light, which helps us with the rendering and also helps with scale. You notice that cup hit the table looking the size of a cup, not the size of an elephant. And we provide integration into all kinds of third-party frameworks to help you with your rendering. Now, the implementation is possible because we're able to take advantage of the awesome hardware in iOS devices, the cameras, the high-performance CPU and GPU, and the motion sensors. And when you bring the software together with these devices, we actually have hundreds of millions of iPhones and iPads that are going to be capable of AR. And in fact, that's going to make overnight ARKit the largest AR platform in the world. We've had some third parties in to take a look at ARKit, and they are totally excited, and we are just blown away by what they've been able to accomplish. IKEA, of course, is placing furniture everywhere, and it's really super awesome. But check this out, what you can do with Batman Lego. I mean, how fun is this? Right on the table, a Lego with a live Lego, Batman, and you can explode the Lego like you could never do in the real world, pan around it, and interact with Batman right there. It's really awesome. And then Pokemon Go. Well, we've all seen it before, but check it out with ARKit. The Pokemon is so real. He's right there on the ground. As the ball bounces, it actually bounces right there in the real environment. It's AR like you've never seen it before. Now,
this is something Google's been doing with their Tango phones, which had like four different cameras in the back. But this is just with the regular iPhone camera.
Really
so
see live. Now, Wingnut
AR see
how
slightly pull ahead in that
Peter
regard.
Jackson's new production company. It's dedicated to producing AR content. We all know Peter Jackson from his incredible cinematic work on movies like the Lord of the Rings series, but he's now really excited about AR. And to show you what he has in the works, I'm thrilled to introduce Wingnut AR's creative director, Alistair Cool. Alistair.
And like they said, that this will be the biggest AR platform in the world because of all the iPhones that people have already in their pockets.
Thanks, Craig. We're really excited to share an exclusive sneak peek at something we've been working on. With ARKit, you don't need any special equipment or tracking markers. It just works. Dan's here with me from Wingnut AR, so let's take a look. Here we're using ARKit to detect the plane on the table, estimate its size, and lock our content onto the surface. And since this is augmented reality, you folks are all in the shot too.
We've seen like a small little, looks like
this
a
is all
building
rendered in
and
real time using
power
the power of Unreal Engine
show up
4.
On a table with
we're at a
figures.
Remote outpost on a desolate world where supplies are scarce. Airships come here to refuel, get repairs.
This looks a lot like what Microsoft showed up and showed off
we're
in 2015
with HoloLens, a gigantic headset
that's
versus a phone.
Two and a half years ago.
They're using an iPad for this demo, I should say. And these look like, you know, game quality graphics. They're pretty detailed. Great shadow rendering. It looks like it's moving smooth. Of course, it's a
demo.
You expect it to work well.
And what's really cool here is that with
ARKit
tracking, you can get in really close and choose how to view the action. It's like you're the director of your own experience.
So a couple little planes landed, and now characters on screen are taking items
out of these planes. Looks like some raiders
are attacking. And they're being attacked. Should be noted that the demo is being done with an iPad Pro, of course, the most powerful iPad you can get.
But they had someone jump off the edge of the table, and actually, you know, the character knew where the edge of the table was.
Yeah, pretty
cool
fascinating.
Airship battles like this in your own living room?
Yes.
I think they're going to regret attacking this outpost.
I think I would play this on
and
the coffee
another one
table.
Down. And we got him.
You wouldn't even have to clear the clutter off your coffee table.
Indeed. Well, just, that didn't end well for anyone.
It's not a real game.
But our heroes
game.
Are limping away to fight another day. So that's one of the things we've been up to at Wingnut AR. And the fact that AR Kit... Thank you. Thank you. The fact that AR Kit enables hundreds of millions of people to enjoy experiences like this opens up so many possibilities. I think it's a real game changer. Look out for an AR experience from us in the App Store later this year. Thank you.
That's exciting. I mean, I'd like to see it in reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
in real augmented reality.
So yeah, this is something Apple needed to do here with Google and Facebook both talking about AR at their developer conferences. They had to come out and lay out their vision, and I think they did that here.
To our customers in China, like QR code support integrated right into the main camera, accessible from the lock screen, super useful for customers in China. So that's our update for iOS 11. I'm going to turn it back to Tim. Thank you.
That's right. iOS 11 is absolutely jam-packed with great features, and I can't wait for you to get your hands on the new App Store and AR Kit. Number five, an important part of the iOS story is, of course, iPad.
All right, will we see new sizes for iPads? Maybe
iPad
more compatibility with Pencil and other apps?
The way we work,
find out.
Play, teach, learn, and create. It's truly a magical piece of glass that transforms into anything you want. We've been pushing the boundaries on iPad, and today we're going to push them further than ever before. And to tell you all about it, I'd like to invite up Jaws. Jaws?
Thank you, Tim, and good morning, everybody. I'm so excited to talk to you today about iPad Pro. When we first introduced iPad Pro just 18 months ago, it completely redefined what you could do with your iPad. Along with your incredible apps, it allowed our users to do really amazing things, from professional design and illustration, to fashion, to architecture, to engineering, and so much more. We're really excited about what can be real in your world today with iPad Pro. Well, and as you know, there's two models to iPad Pro today. There's a 13-inch and a 9.7-inch. And the 9.7-inch is our most popular model. It has a screen large enough to get your work done, but it's in a thin and light enough package that allows you to take it with you everywhere you go. Well, today, we're going to introduce an all-new iPad Pro. It's going to take everything you love about the 9.7-inch and give you a whole lot more to love. Let's take a look. This is the new iPad Pro. It's the first iPad Pro with a larger 10.5-inch Retina display. Now, why 10.5-inch? Well, for one, it's a lot larger. It's 20% larger than a 9.7-inch. But we are able to reduce the borders by nearly 40%, which allows us to fit it in this incredibly compact design that still weighs just 1 pound. And of course, 10.5-inch also allows us to do some other things. It's the perfect size to allow us to display a full-size on-screen keyboard. Woo! It's also the perfect size to allow us to have a full-size smart keyboard as well. And when we deliver the smart keyboard, we're going to have support for more than 30 languages at launch, including Chinese, and for the very first time, a Japanese JIS keyboard. Now, iPad Pro has always had the best displays in the industry, and both sizes are going to get really incredible new displays today. They're the best displays that we've ever made. They're packed with incredible features like True Tone for automatic white balance, P3 wide color gamut for the best color, ultra-low reflectivity, the best in the industry, and they're 50% brighter with 600 nits. And this extra brightness and the P3 wide color gamut means that with iOS 11, you'll be able to display HDR video for the first time on an iPad for a really immersive cinematic experience. They're truly awesome displays. But our biggest breakthrough is a feature we call ProMotion. So what is ProMotion? Well, we were able to take our unique hardware and software capabilities and dramatically improve our display performance. Now, typically, up until today, mobile displays have refreshed at 60 hertz, means they update their content 60 times every second. Well, on the new iPad Pro, we've doubled that maximum refresh rate to an incredible 120 hertz. So what does that mean to you? It means that all of your motion content on your screen is going to be smoother, crisper, more responsive. Now, this is something you have to really touch and feel yourself to appreciate because our projection systems just aren't capable of doing those type of refresh rates. But I'll tell you, the difference is dramatic. And when you scroll, it's buttery smooth. Now, the higher refresh rate also means that it works even better with the Apple Pencil. We already have the industry-leading performance for drawing and writing with the Apple Pencil, but with ProMotion, it gets even better. It's more responsive, and it reduces our latency to an industry-best 20 milliseconds. So drawing is incredibly fluid and even more natural. You're going to love using the Apple Pencil with the new iPad Pro. Another breakthrough of ProMotion is that these become the first mobile displays to be able to dynamically adjust the refresh rate, depending on what you're looking at. And this is a really big breakthrough for both display quality as well as for power savings. So when you have fast-moving content, they can update quickly. But they can also update slower when you don't need that type of refresh rate. For example, a still image. This allows us to save a lot of energy and give you better battery life. So hopefully you see why these are not just the best displays that we've ever made, but we think they're the most advanced displays on the planet. Next, let's talk about performance. iPad is already best in class for performance, but we're not resting on our laurels. These are the fastest we've ever created. Inside them, they're powered by the A10X Fusion chip. The A10X has a 6-core CPU, 3 high-performance cores, 3 high-efficiency cores, all automatically managed by the Apple Performance Controller. It also has a 12-core GPU. This is a powerhouse. And it delivers 30% faster CPU performance over our already industry-leading A9X and 40% faster graphics performance. Our chip team has done just an amazing job over the years with the performance improvements, and the results have been staggering. They're delivering an industry-leading graphics performance that's more than 500 times the original iPad from just a few years ago. But of course, numbers only tell part of the story. To demonstrate the real-world performance of the A10X and the new iPad Pro, I'd like to invite Ash Hewson of Serif to give you a demo of their new Pro photo editing app called Affinity Photo. Ash?
Thanks, Jules. So I'm thrilled today to be able to show you the iPad version of Affinity Photo. This is a truly high-end professional photo editing tool. And on this latest iPad Pro, we can achieve levels of performance which are simply unattainable on any other device. And I'm going to try and show you that today by creating a movie poster. I've already set up a few layers. I've kind of got this great background, some stormy sky. I've got a turbulent sea and this ship. Now, the first thing you'll notice when you're using this is that as you're kind of moving layers around, rotating them, or even just sort of panning and zooming around your work, I'm seeing all of this now at 120 frames a second, so it just feels incredibly smooth. But when you come to edit layers, because of metal, we can achieve performance more than 4 times an i7 quad-core desktop PC. And I'll show you what that means. On this C, I'm going to apply a 12 filter. And look, just with my finger, I can kind of push this sea around. I can even just like flick a wave right over the side of the ship. It's a totally new way to kind of interact with your designs. And actually, everything's this fast. So let's say I wanted to set this ship on fire, for example. I've got this fireball here. I can move this over the back of the ship. But to make that look more realistic, I need to apply blend mode. Now, normally blend modes are something that takes a lot of trial and error. But now, look at this. I can just scrub down here, and I get an instant preview of all of the different blend modes. So it makes it really, really easy to select the right blend mode that I want. Now, of course, everything I've done so far, I've done using touch. But with iPad Pro, we have the best stylus that's ever been made. And we can do some great stuff with Apple Pencil too. A really good example of that is our lighting filter. So here I choose lighting. I'll make that a bit bigger. And look, I can actually control now the angle and the tilt of that light using Apple Pencil. There's no latency whatsoever. So it's a really immersive way to work. Now, I said at the start I was creating a movie poster. And in fact, what I'm actually doing is creating a pirate movie poster. So now I need a pirate. And I've got Captain Jack Sparrow here. But at the moment, of course, he's on the wrong background. So what I need to do is cut him out. And I'm going to use some selection tools to do that. So to start with, I'm just going to do, and you can see how quick it is to do a really quick selection with pencil to sort of snap around the edges. But of course, with selections, what often happens is you need to do a much more accurate selection around hair. And to do that, we're going to do a selection refinement. This is something that takes a huge amount of CPU power, but on this latest iPad, it's twice as fast as ever before. And you can see pretty much instantly, I get a selection down to individual strands of hair. And that's it. That's my poster complete. A professional looking poster created on a design, on a device that I can hold in my hands. It's really incredible. I really think that iPad Pro alongside Affinity Photo is a truly game-changing experience for professional photo editing. And the best thing of all is that you can now experience it now, because I'm delighted to announce that Affinity Photo for iPad is available on the App Store from today. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Ash. That's amazing performance, again, especially for a device that's so thin and light in a simple one-pound package you can take with you everywhere you go. And what's also cool is, despite all this performance, the new iPad Pro still delivers the same all-day 10-hour battery life that our iPad users love. Next, let's talk about cameras. The new iPad Pro features the latest camera system from our iPhone 7. That means the same high-performance 12-megapixel sensor with optical image stabilization. And it has the ability to even capture and, of course, edit 4K video on the go. They're absolutely fantastic cameras. The front-facing cameras from the iPhone 7 as well, with all of its great features, like wide color gamut capture, auto image stabilization, and the entire display can light up to become the world's brightest and largest retina flash. We have great accessories as well. The iPad Pro supports USB 3, which means that you're going to get faster transfers with your USB and SD camera adapters. And it's also, we also support fast charging, which means any of our USB-C charge adapters will now allow you to charge at half the time.
Hopefully they have these sorts of adapters for the new iPhones as well.
We have available in polyurethane, and then we're bringing back the popular leather as well. And then we've designed an all-new leather sleeve with a built-in storage for your Apple Pencil.
Storage.
That's the new iPad Pro family.
That's very helpful, yeah. I just keep mine in my backpack. It's a lot nicer to keep it with the device.
An incredibly compact design. Powerful new A10X Fusion chip. Incredible new cameras. And of course, as you would expect, we make all these in incredibly environmentally friendly ways. We're also going to double the amount of memory that comes at the beginning of these configurations. Both sizes will now start with 64 gigabytes of memory.
Makes sense for pro users.
Mm-hmm. And the 10.5-inch with 64 gigs will now be at $649. And it's just $150 more to move up to the bigger display at $799. We're also going to have configurations in 256 and 512 gigabytes, half a terabyte of storage in an iPad. And as always, you can get any of these models with LTE as well. So this is the new iPad Pro. You can order them today. They'll start shipping next week. And, of course, because they're shipping now, they're going to ship with iOS 10, but you'll be able to easily update to iOS 11 as a free update this fall. But you haven't heard the full iOS 11 story yet as it relates to iPad. So I'd like to invite Craig back to the stage to tell you about some incredible iPad features coming in iOS 11.
Thank you. Hey, everybody.
Did you forget to tell us something?
I'm hoping it's more compatibility with Pencil for other apps aside from drawing. We'll see.
If you love iPad like I do, well, buckle up, for you're in for a wild ride. We are taking iOS to the next level. This is the largest iOS release for iPad we've ever done. Now, it starts with the dock. And we all know that dock hovering down there at the bottom of the screen. It is more powerful than ever. You can fill it with apps.
Mac-like.
On the right, there's a predictive area. Figures out what you're going to use next, including your continuity apps. And now you can summon the dock from anywhere, right from the bottom of the screen, and use it for switching apps just like that. And what's incredible
it should help
is
speed
how
up
it's
multitasking.
Used for multitasking. Yeah. Okay. So now if you're in an app and you swipe up, well, you can pull an app out just like that into slide over.
That's really helpful. So right now, multitasking is not that easy on the iPad Pro.
Definitely not. Yeah, this split window view looks a lot easier to use.
You can snap your apps into split view, but what's really cool is the new app switcher because it preserves all of your spaces with your app pairings. It's really great.
It's a lot more Mac-like.
The iPad, of course, is the ultimate multi-handed, multi-touch device.
You can see multiple windows.
So we're so excited to bring drag and drop to iPad.
Long overdue, I'd say.
You can drag images, you can drag text, you can drag URLs, you can multi-select and multi-hand drag. It's a drag fest. Now, it's incredibly productive, but of course sometimes you have to type and so we made the keyboard even more productive as well. You can now flick on keys to access punctuation and numbers all without switching planes. It's super fast and super easy. Now, we have a new app to introduce to you today, and it's called Files.
That is really exciting. They really want to push this as a laptop.
Files,
yes, so Mac-like,
all your files on your iPad,
and for the iPad.
Supports everything you'd expect. Nested folders, spring loading, list view, favorites, search, tags, and it has this beautiful recents view that pulls it all together across all of your sources because it supports not only iCloud, it also supports third-party storage providers like Box, Dropbox, OneDrive, and Google Drive.
Interesting.
And they're all right here in your sidebar. You know what? Let's do a demo. Let's take our first look at iOS 11 on iPad. So here we have our new dock at the bottom. Now, I can easily drag right into the dock, just like this. It's a great way to launch apps, as always. But now it's also a great way to switch apps. Just tap like that. Now, if I want to multitask, check this out. Drag it out. It's right there. Now, I can slide it off the screen. I can now slide it over here. Both these views are completely live. I can go into split view just like this. But I want you to check out the new app switcher. I'm just going to swipe up from the bottom and keep swiping. It goes back like that. Let's do that again. That is so great. It's that easy. Now, you notice my spaces are preserved. So over here on the left, I have Mail and Safari. In split view, I can just tap those open like this. Let's try some drag and drop. So I'm going to drag a URL from the top of Safari here right into this mail message. Drag it and drop it. Now I can drag it. Yep. Let's drag an image. Yep, just like that. Now, I want
to
focus just on mail.
You have to use their mail app.
Dragging across spaces.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how much they open drag and drop up to third-party app developers.
Here of some potential drone protection options for the new campus. So I'm going to start a drag, but watch this. With my other hand, I'm going to tap. I can add to this selection just like that. And I can even swipe up with my other hand into multitasking. Move over to mail and drop.
But between photos, mail, and Safari, looks great. We'll see about that third party.
Now, I want to show you files. I can bring up files, of course, right from
the Yes, drag kit.
Just like this. And it's a great way to deal with attachments because I can take this attachment and this mail message, pick it up, and just drop it right into this folder of top secret projects. Now, let's dive all the way in and take a closer look at the Files app. We see it has this gorgeous grid view, but it also has a list view that provides me all the details about my files. I can sort them by size, or let's sort by date. Now I can create new folders. Let's say I want to create an R&D folder right here. I'm going to take some of my top secret prospective projects, and I can do multi-select just like this. drop them in. Now I can also take the folder, drag it right in to my favorites, and these are synced across all of my devices. And if I want to tag a file, of course I just drag it right on there and make that one important. And you notice in addition to iCloud, here on the left, I've accessed all my cloud providers like Box. So you can see I have files here I'm using and folders that I'm using for collaboration. And that includes this drone defense proposal right here, presentation. And I want to show you, when I go into the recents view from the tab at the bottom, notice I get a view across everything, including that one inside a Box. I'm going to tap into that keynote presentation. And for my final act, I want to show you how I can use files directly from the dock. Just swipe up. If I tap and hold, I get access to my recent assets. I can just pick this up, drop it down, just like that. And that is a quick demo of our productivity features on iPad.
So things like list view in files are not sexy, but it is what's keeping me from using my iPad every day and just sticking with my MacBook.
Yeah, if you want to sell the iPad Pro as a laptop replacement, and this is a productivity machine, these are features that you need. It's not quite OS, you know, Mac OS parity, but it's a step, big step.
Safari content, we create it into a continuous scrolling view that you can mark up. And you can actually do this with any app that supports printing, because we have a create PDF option that'll create a markup PDF. It's a really great
mark
way
up the web using your
to
Apple
mark up
Pencil,
anything and share it.
That Microsoft has allowed people to do on Surface devices for a while.
And so now, when you take a screenshot, we'll create a thumbnail down in the bottom of the screen. If you tap it, you go instantly into markup. You can mark it up right there and share it. Now, it's really cool. Now, we've also integrated Pencil deeply into Notes. So if you're working on a note and later you're at the lock screen, you want to get back, just a tap of the Pencil to the lock screen and you're right back into your note. And we've made your note, handwritten text, searchable. So we can now search handwriting. We use deep learning to recognize what you write.
Interesting.
And if you're doing primarily typed notes, you can now also do inline drawings right there. It's very handy.
So depending on how sloppy your handwriting is, you might be able to test that.
Now, of course, sometimes we still have to deal with paper. So Notes now has a built-in document scanner. It can correct perspective and contrast. And when you bring the note in, you can mark it up right with your pencil.
Again, these are things that third-party apps have been doing
and
for a long time.
We've integrated markup into mail as well, so you can personalize your mail messages with inline drawings. Now, for a look at all of these great new Pencil features, I'd like to introduce the man who heads iPad software engineering for us, Toby Patterson, for a live demo. Toby.
Good morning. Well, the first thing I want to show you is a quick way of getting to your notes using your Apple Pencil. You just tap on the lock screen like this, and it slides up to reveal your notes beneath it. Now, you can see here I've got a handwritten note, and I want to show you how easy it is to create one of these. Watch at the top of the note here as I edit the title just by putting the pencil down and writing like this after the 2017 keynote. It's as natural as putting pencil to paper. Now, something paper can't help you with is finding your notes again later. We're using machine learning to recognize your handwriting and index it in Spotlight. Let's switch into Spotlight now, and we'll search for that text that I just wrote out. You can see here I've got the new Flick keyboard, which makes it really easy to enter numbers just by swiping down on the keys like this. And you can see there it's already found my note as the top hit, even with my atrocious handwriting. We'll just tap on that.
His handwriting looks pretty good.
Yeah, compared to the average person. I was going to say, no one's learning handwriting anymore, so this will be useful for the next 10 years and then no longer.
I want to show you how you mix drawing with typed text and tables and all of Notes' other great features. This is a note that my young daughter shared with me as part of a school assignment where she had to work with her parents to develop an idea for a new app. Now, she asked me how many copies of our app I thought we might sell, and so I want to quickly draw a graph to give her some idea of that. I'm just going to press down here with the pencil to make some space for my drawing, and we can take that little grabber and open up some more room. Now, I am really bad at drawing, but I just love doing it. And what's great about drawing on the iPad is it works the same way as it does with paper. And that means it's really easy for me to draw really badly right here. Watch, I'm just gonna put the pencil down and just like that, zoop. It's so simple, and I think you're gonna have a lot of fun rediscovering the joy of drawing. But let's move on now. So my daughter's learned a few things from me about how Apple works, and before I left this morning, she gave me an NDA to sign. I'm gonna use the new document scanner and notes and my pencil to take care of that in a snap. We'll just tap the plus button here to bring up the document scanner, and all I need to do is point the camera at the piece of paper. Notes will take the picture automatically, even straighten the page up. We'll open it up full screen here, and now I just fill in the blanks with my pencil. And just like that, I've got a signed copy of the NDA saved away in my notes.
He didn't give us his signature.
Now, I see my daughter sent me a message, and it must be pretty important if she's interrupting my demo. So if you'll excuse me, I'm just going to tap on that and see what she has to say. Wow, an offer for $100 million is really pretty thrilling. I need to send this to my wife right away. I'm going to take a screenshot of this, and then we'll tap on the thumbnail here to open up our new screenshot editing UI. Mm. From here, I can crop it down to just the part of the image that I want to send. I can scribble a quick note with my pencil. And then I can bring up the share sheet to send it off to my wife right away. So these are just a few of the ways that you can use your pencil with your iPad in iOS 11. Back to you now, Craig. Thank you.
It is so great when your grade school child gets $100 million of funding. They do grow up so fast these days. Well, so these
such a Silicon Valley
are some
hypothetical
great features for the iPad. And of course, they're joined by all of these other features you heard from earlier today. We're really excited about what we're doing with iPad this year and really excited about iOS 11. Now, iOS 11 is available to all of you developers today. And if you sign up at beta.apple.com, you can get a beta at the end of the month, and we're making it available as a free upgrade to everyone in the fall. It supports all of these devices. That is your update for iOS 11. I'm going to turn it back over to Tim. Thank you.
All right, so that was number 5. Now we should be on number 6, right? Right. This should be the final announcement of the keynote. I think we've gone a little over 2 hours now. So.
iOS 11 really takes iPad to a whole
new
level.
Is this the Siri speaker?
People are going to be able to do more in more places than ever before. We are so excited about the marriage of iOS 11 and the new iPad Pro that we made a video, and I'd love to run it for you.
To keep my hands on myself. So people using iOS 11 and the iPad in the real world, dragging and dropping
on elevators, on buses, on planes and cafes, iPadding everywhere.
It's a drag fest.
And using the pencil a lot, and that split screen multitasking, the new dock, the file storage app. Tapping into different cloud services as well.
I know a lot of people are interested in getting more crossover between the PowerBook, between macOS and iOS 11, but it seems like they're really keeping those pretty separate.
They're keeping them separate, especially with no touch functionality on any Macs as of yet for this display themselves.
The new iPad Pro and iOS 11 as we are. Now, we've got one last thing to talk to you about.
And last
one
thing
more
instead
thing.
Of one more thing. Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to music. Music has always been a part of Apple's DNA.
We first revolutionized the music industry with iTunes.
He's showing the first version of iTunes.
Then we
the first iPod.
Changed the way people listen to music on the go with the iPod. And today, iPhone has become the best portable music player in the world. And it's even better when it's paired with Apple Music. You now have 40 million songs in your pocket. And when you add AirPods, it brings an absolutely magical experience to wireless audio. Now, so we have such a great portable music experience. But what about our homes?
What about our homes, Tim?
We think we can do a lot to make this experience much better. Just like we did with portable music, we want to reinvent home music. And I'd like to invite Phil up to tell you all about it. Phil.
Thank you. This is really exciting. The chance to reinvent the way we enjoy music in the home. I can't think of anything that matters more to so many of us. Why hasn't this happened yet? There certainly are a lot of companies hard at work making products to enjoy music in our home. But none of them have quite nailed it yet. Some have worked hard to make wireless music sound good around our homes.
He's showing us some of the speakers.
These aren't smart speakers. Others have worked to make smart speakers that you can talk to.
Showing an Amazon Echo.
They don't sound so great when you listen to music. We want to combine all this in a product that can really deliver a breakthrough experience. And our team has been hard at work for many years now on a breakthrough home speaker. And it has to do a few things really great if it's going to be a great breakthrough speaker. First, it needs to rock the house. Right? We need to enjoy our music, whatever genre you love, really low or really loud, free from distortion. Second,
let you buy toilet paper.
It needs to be spatially aware. It's going to fit in different rooms in our house, and it needs to be smart enough to know what to do to make the music sound great. Third, it has to be really fun to use. It has to have a built-in musicologist, an expert on music, who can help us to hear the music we love or discover music we're going to love. Now, we're working on this speaker for later this year, but we want to give you, 6,000 of our closest friends, a sneak peek at it this morning. And here it is.
Rounded look. Kind of looks like a fabric-covered Mac Pro so far.
Yeah, so that's what the leaked images look like, if you've seen those. Black, white, space gray. Looks like a marshmallow.
It is absolutely beautiful, and we call it HomePod.
HomePod. Yes. Interesting name. Oh, not the Siri speaker, not Apple speaker.
Just like
HomePod.
iPod reinvented music in our pockets, HomePod is going to reinvent music
HomePod.
In our homes.
You live inside a HomePod.
So let's talk about these features. First, rock the house. The HomePod is just under 7 inches tall. It's covered in a seamless 3D mesh fabric that has incredible acoustic properties. And it hides within it amazing audio technology. For example, along the bottom is a 7-array beamform tweeter pack that's packed with 7 tweeters, each with their own individual driver. They have precision acoustic horns that drive the audio from within and then out along the bottom with tremendous directional control. And that'll become really clear in a bit as we talk about how it works. It has a really big woofer, a 4-inch woofer, upward facing with a large motor to move a lot of air. There's automatic bass equalization and dynamic software modeling so that as we turn the volume up, it's free from distortion. And all of this is controlled by an Apple A8 chip. Yes, the same chip that powers the inside of our iPhone
is inside HomePod. It's perhaps the biggest brain ever in a speaker, and it does some incredible things. It does real-time acoustic modeling, audio beamforming, and multi-channel echo cancellation. You don't have to know what any of that is, just know that it sounds incredible. Next, talk about this spatial awareness. What does that mean? Well, you plug in your HomePod to AC, and it gets its music wirelessly. And it's compact enough that you can put it most anywhere in your house. You can put it on a table, on a shelf, against the wall, in a corner, and it intelligently and automatically detects the space it's within. And it uses that information to adjust the audio, to balance it, and take full advantage of the environment and create a very spacious sound. Now, we want to give you a sense of what that experience is like. So we want to play some music in this room and show you a visual simulation to give you an understanding of some of the technologies it's using and how it's adapting them to make an incredible sound out of this compact speaker. So we're going to start by playing an audio track, and it'll be a full mix, and then we're going to break it down into some of the components that the HomePod controls.
And this is essentially simulating a surround sound like experience by basically understanding how big your room is.
So that's a full, rich audio mix.
Virtually, anyway,
but within it, HomePod detects the center vocals and can use beamforming to direct that.
Instead of having a bunch of Sonos everywhere.
It gives incredible clarity and precision. And then it can detect something called direct energy with the instrumentation and direct that in the room as well. In addition to that direct energy, there's something that's usually missing in music, ambient audio, the backing vocals and reverb. HomePod can direct all of this and pull it together to a full, rich mix that fills up your room.
This impressed you, Nate.
It's a really remarkable experience to hear this kind of a spacious sound come from such a compact speaker. And if you love one, you should see what it's like when you set up two and they automatically work together to give this incredible spacious sound that really has the power to rock your house.
Does it do multi-room?
Next, a musicologist, this intelligent helper to help us discover the music we love. HomePod has an incredible speaker system that works together with our Apple Music subscription. From the beginning, it's designed to work with that. Now, Apple Music, as you know, provides music in the cloud, and the speaker can get it directly from the cloud. You can get 40 million tracks, 2 million artists, tens of thousands of playlists, but not just any music library. This is your music library. It knows the playlists you've set up. It knows the artists you love, and all of them stream directly to your HomePod. It works with an array of 6 microphones around the middle, so as you talk to it and you say those magic words, "Hey Siri," you see a waveform light up on top, and now it can respond to your commands and help serve up the music you want to hear. The Siri team has worked very hard to adapt the domain of music and Siri to be even greater and understand more of the questions we're going to ask about music. Simple things, obviously, like play Beats 1 Radio. We all want to do that. Or play I'm Poppy. Check it out if you don't know what that's about. Play something new. Who's singing on this track? Something I ask all the time. Who's playing drums on this track? For complex questions like, what was the top song on May 5th, 2016? Or just play more like that, or I like that song. These are free form. Siri doesn't need a specific list of commands. It can interpret what you're saying and help you discover the music you love. And even better, you don't have to just sit next to the HomePod to talk to it. You can be across the room and speak to the HomePod even while loud music is playing, and the speaker array and the microphones can pick it up and hear what you're saying. So HomePod, It has the power to rock the house. It has spatial awareness so that it understands the rooms we place it within. And it has the fun interactivity of Siri becoming a musicologist and helping us to listen to the music we love. And since Siri's built in there and you can speak to it, well, the team's also worked hard to make it a great and helpful home assistant as well. We said the domain of music is something Siri knows really well in HomePod. There are other domains as well. We've worked hard to pick the first ones that we think matter most in a product like HomePod. So, of course, you can play your podcasts. But it can also do things like give you news, give you weather, traffic, sports. You can ask it to set a reminder, set a timer, text someone with messages. And if you have HomeKit devices set up in your home, you can speak to your HomePod and control your HomeKit devices. So, for example, with a HomePod set up, you can say, when do the Red Sox play next? They're going to beat the Yankees, trust me. Tune to NPR instead. Flip a coin. Remind me to bring snacks to a party. You can set up reminders, check all these sports news and weather, all directly with your voice. Talk to a HomePod to get the information directly from the cloud. And if you have HomeKit devices set up, you can say simple things like, are the lights on? Turn the heat up. Turn on the air conditioning. Bring the shades down halfway. Turn off the lights in the bedroom. And if you've set up scenes in HomeKit, you can control those as well. You can say, I'm home. It's movie time. I'm leaving now. And the whole scene can automatically happen just by talking to your HomePod. And because there is a HomePod base, a HomeKit base built into HomePod, that means anywhere in the world, once you've set up your first HomePod, you control your HomeKit devices remotely using the built-in Home app on your iPhone or iPad. Now, setting up a HomePod and its microphone array in your home, you probably have a question that we've worked really hard to deal with, which is privacy. Our team cares deeply about your privacy. So, for example, it has that magic phrase, "Hey Siri." Until you say it, nothing's being sent to Apple. It recognizes when you do say it, and from that point, it sends an anonymous Siri ID in order to help you with the commands you're looking for. And of course, that communication is all encrypted. So this is the HomePod. It's a breakthrough home speaker. Typically, Wi-Fi speakers, if they're good quality, are $300 to $500. And a smart speaker might cost you $100 to $200. So it's not unreasonable for a HomePod to be priced in the range of $400 to $700. So we're really excited to tell you that HomePod is going to be priced for $349.
More expensive than the Amazon Echo.
And Google Home.
And the Google Home.
Comes in white and space gray. It'll start shipping this December, first in the U.S., the U.K., and Australia. And then next year we'll start bringing it around the world. So that's HomePod. Back to you, Tim.
Thank you. It is so cool. We really believe it's going to take your home music experience to the next level. Now, it's been an incredible morning. We've shared with you lots of things this morning, and all of them are shipping this year, some now, some in the fall, and others at the end of the year. We got started with watchOS, more intuitive and intelligent than ever before, incredible new features to help us live a healthier life. macOS High Sierra, great refinements and technologies that will push the macOS experience forward. Updates to MacBook, MacBook Pro, and iMac, faster and more capable than ever before. And iOS 11, a major update of the world's best and most advanced mobile operating system, absolutely jam-packed with new features, including a completely new app store, peer-to-peer payments in Apple Pay, and with ARKit, iOS 11 becomes the world's largest augmented reality platform overnight. iPad is taken to a whole new level with incredible iPad features in iOS 11. It's the biggest release for iPad ever. And of course, a new lineup of iPad Pro with an all-new perfect 10.5-inch size with advanced displays, powerful new features that enable people to do more with their iPads than ever before. And we gave you two sneak peeks. iMac Pro, an entirely new workstation class of products that we designed specifically for our Pro users. And the HomePod, a breakthrough home speaker with amazing sound and incredible intelligence. It will reinvent home audio. Now, we have a hands-on area for the press set up to attend immediately after the keynote. And for all developers, we welcome you to come by from 4 to 7 p.m. this evening. We've got over 100 sessions planned for you this week and over 1,000 Apple engineers here to spend time with you, so take advantage of the time. Tomorrow, we've got a special fireside chat planned in the morning in this room. And someone will be joining us that's devoted her entire career to highlighting and encouraging young people, women, and doers. I'm very excited to tell you that Michelle Obama will join us. She'll be joining us for the open session in this room tomorrow, and she'll be talking about empowering people from all walks of life to change the world. This is a very special treat, and I encourage everyone to come. I hope everyone here has a fantastic week. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
So we got our Siri speaker.
We got the Siri speaker called the HomePod. It's kind of a goofy name, but I kind of like it because the iPod was such an iconic thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the music app originally was the iPod app on the iPhone, and that's kind of gone away. And I don't know, maybe I'm a silly romantic or something, but I like that they're kind of keeping some pod reference around. But I did like your joke that the HomePod is what you live in.
Well, the word pod is cool again now, you know, because of podcasts.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Well, that's why podcasts were called podcasts, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk more about the iOS-specific stuff.
In iOS today.
But yeah. Just like a recap of the Mac stuff. Hi, Sierra.
Hi, Sierra.
The new name. Public beta will be available later this summer. The developer update is today. They'll have autoplay blocking in Safari, mm-hmm. intelligent tracking prevention. That's a lot of do not track that other browsers already have.
Yep.
There's a lot of already have catching up, but maybe doing it better. We'll see. More modern file system, the APFS, Apple file system, native encryption, and then improvements to Metal.
Yep.
10 times improvement. That's Metal 2 for pro content creation.
With a focus on machine learning on your devices, which is very interesting.
And it'll integrate with Steam VR. That was exciting. The first real Apple VR.
Yeah. I mean, Apple's finally, you know, kind of getting into the VR space with their devices. No longer, basically, if you wanted to get into VR, and still for early adopters, you had to have a Windows machine. You had no other choice. And now you can, if you have one of the newer Macs, you'll be able to use HTC Vive headset. They didn't mention Oculus Rift or any others, but you know, not that long ago, Oculus said, "Well, we're not going to make it Mac compatible because the Macs aren't powerful enough." And you're coming out and seeing Apple now enter the VR space. You know, whether or not that'll help it go mainstream, we'll see. It's still a niche thing, but I'm very encouraged by that, especially as someone who is an early adopter of VR.
New Macs shipping today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, updates to their MacBook Pro line, the iMac line, and they said a slight update to the MacBook Air, although they didn't really give us much details on that, along with a couple price cuts. And, of course, the iMac Pro, which sounds as though it will be the Mac Pro replacement.
Right, and that one's not shipping today. That's December, I think, but mm-hmm. they just gave us a sneak peek, and that's exciting. Lots of teraflops.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like the sort of, basically, if you're a video editor, an animator, an architect, some high-level graphic designer, that's the machine Apple is going to want you to buy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the Surface, you know, the big Surface like tablet computer that you can draw on, the one that Leo is using a lot for This Week in Tech, if
the
you've
Surface
seen
Studio.
That. Yeah, Surface Studio, there you go. That is Microsoft's play for this exact same market. And their tactic is, okay, we're going to use touch screens. We're going to use allowing you to draw on the screen. And that's very compelling, although it doesn't have a discrete graphics card that's powerful enough to power a VR headset. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of a processing power compromise where here Apple is going with again, focusing on the processing power and not necessarily giving you those touchscreen-like features and things like that. So very much keeping Mac OS and iOS separate. Mm-hmm.
That'll be $5,000. So
starting at
$5,000. Yeah. So then, for creators or anyone who just wants to impress mm-hmm. people with their giant computer, this is great for those people.
And it has the four USB-C/Thunderbolt 3 ports on the back, which is the most for any iMac. And they're still kind of pushing the idea that if you want to expand this device, you're going to do so through cables to accessories, right? So it's not the sort of tower that you can open up and build in and swap out the graphics card. But if you have an external graphics card in a box, if you have an external, RAID array, if you have that external monitor, that's how you build out your system, filling up your desk rather than filling up one device.
Mm-hmm. They talked about machine learning, the vision API, natural mm-hmm. language API, lots of stuff for developers. The AR kit. There's always a kit. It's health kit, home kit. This was the AR kit.
Yeah.
And I feel like AR is really going to be bigger, especially for commercial practical reasons, than VR is going to be.
Yeah, it's interesting to, you know, Facebook hit their AR vision with their camera built into the namesake Facebook app. You know, we saw the kind of advancement of Google goggles with the Google Assistant powered camera that they are working on. And now we see Apple's vision with the iPhone camera. It's not, you know, something loaded up with a bunch of cameras like Google had with Tango. But AR is a space where every major tech company is putting their dollars and efforts into. Microsoft with HoloLens, as you mentioned earlier. But, you know, the one thing we haven't seen, and I guess that's probably going to come from third-party developers, is really what is that useful thing that makes AR indispensable in my life? Right now, for a lot of people, AR is Pokemon Go, right? That's kind of the defining thing that we were all enjoying together. And the promise of usefulness is there, but I don't feel like we're necessarily seeing how AR will fit into our lives from any of these companies yet. But it does seem like an area that holds a ton of promise for the future. And building it into the iPhone, super smart because it's the best-selling single smartphone out there. Mm-hmm. And folks are up to date with the latest operating system, and they have a huge amount of developers that are tapping into it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen niche uses, decorators, let's see where my furniture goes, or cyclists.
Yeah, I'd love more of that.
Like
love,
goggles, yeah. You know, the heads-up display. I've seen a lot of that. But, yeah, I mean, I do think it's the future in some way or another.
Yep.
And like I said, iOS stuff, iOS 11, the iPads, we'll talk in depth on iOS today and talk again about those in tech news today. Anything else? Any last final thoughts?
Oh, and well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, there are, I guess, mentioning that Apple Music has 27 million subscribers. Spotify has about 50 million. It seems like that's some healthy growth here. What we didn't see, I mean, I guess most of the things that were rumored, we did see updates to Macs, updates to iPad hardware, you know, the HomePod Siri speaker. You know, what we didn't see was content, video content, original video content inside of Apple Music. And, you know, or that 4K Apple TV that I'd like to see someday. But, you know, they kind of delivered on all of the things that we were expecting, as well as the ability to pay person to person inside of iMessage with Apple Pay. So not a ton of surprises here, but it seems like they delivered and hit on all the notes that were expected and that you would argue that they would need to hit on at this point to be competitive with Microsoft and Google and Facebook. And, you know, again, these developer conferences are really trying to convince developers to, hey, you know, put your resources here where we're at. Come build with Apple, come build with Google, come build with Facebook. These are their visions of these AR, futures and AI futures and all these sorts of things. It was interesting. They did hit on privacy as a distinction factor with the HomePod and with their machine learning on device and with the contextual features for Siri. It seems like Siri is going to get hopefully a lot smarter. But, you know, this is really just kind of both a sell to developers and consumers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's exciting stuff. We will be doing iOS Today coming up, if you're watching this live, in probably about 15 or 20 minutes of Tech News Today later on. And if you wanted to watch this all again, you, of course, can get it at twit.tv. And thanks, Nate, and thanks to you for watching.
Yeah, right on. Thanks.
And thanks to you guys.
Yeah, we have a studio audience. We had a few folks come out here, some developers in town for WWDC as well. So that was a good time.
Awesome.
All right. I know we don't do high fives at the end of these, right?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, do we? Okay, we do now.